Okay, before we come in, I just want to give an apology because there will be a massive mistake once we get to the anime show Fire Force. For some reason, I keep calling Tamake Hibiki. I don't know why I make that mistake, but I continually keep doing it. This comes right after me having a very long texting conversation with a friend talking about ReZero, where I somehow confuse Subaru with the name Shiro. So I'm just all over the place right now with names. There are four names for me that I'm still trying to grasp, and all these animes at the same time when I'm watching them, they're all starting to blend together. So talking about them, it's hard to keep them all straight. Just want to let you guys know that. So when Fire Force comes in, when I say Hibiki, know that I mean Tamake. Okay, so just bear with us. Enjoy the show. That should be the only error in there, but I'm sure I've made others, and you are free to call me out on them. This is just the one that I know immediately that I did not catch. So thank you, and enjoy the show. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I'm your host, Richard Martindale, and with me today is Ian Shaw.
In body, or no, in spirit, if not in body.
Indeed.
Damn, I already fucked up.
Well, luckily today it's just Ian Shaw, and we don't have another person to...
not that annoying Patrick guy.
Yeah, curse him and his wonderful life of flying. So, today we're doing our special anime edition podcast episode. I was going to save this for a summer and fall combined thing, like what we did with winter and spring, but man, summer had too many anime, and it just made little sense to try to... I can't imagine how long that podcast would be with how much summer has to offer this year. So rather than that, and because we're just so excited about summer, we decided to do a summer-only episode, and woohoo, and kind of go from there. So, Ian... how's the summer anime season been treating you?
Oh man, it has been surprisingly hefty, I would say. Like between the leftover spring anime that are going into their second core, and then the summer season. Like it's just been very satisfying, I'd say. Like a lot of good stuff, a lot of... And then some bad stuff that I'm watching anyway. So, you know, it's good.
Oh, man. I'm curious about what the bad stuff is that you're watching.
Oh, there's some stuff on this list
okay.
that I would consider bad. But I am watching it.
Yeah, there's some... Okay, so the bad stuff here is like... there's one that I watched because every once in a while it just piques my curiosity. I'm just like, well, what is this? And then I'm like, okay, it's exactly what I thought this was. I don't know why I wasted 22 minutes of my life. But then there was other ones where it's like, okay, I know this is bad, but I can't stop watching this. Like, I want to stop.
Car crash o'clock.
I can never defend this in, like, an intellectual discussion about, like, anything in this show. But there are something I like enough to keep coming back each week.
I'd say this season has really thrown me for a loop as to where I'm going to be at the end of the year as far as picking, you know, all of the Crunchyroll Award categories.
Oh, God, yeah.
As far best action, anime of the year, best drama. Like, there are so many between this season and the stuff that's already come out this year that I'm starting to... get a little uncomfortable with the idea of having to decide in a couple of months which ones should win.
Yeah, like I have a couple in mind already. I think there are two heavy hitters in the summer right now, and then like a couple right underneath them that I'm like, man, this is like any other year, this is the show that would have like pushed it over the top for me of like really, really good, like, or like the show of the year kind of a anime. But
because these other two heavy hitters are there. And that all depends on how, like, one of them ends for me to kind of see. I start to get, now I'm like, oh, I don't know what to pick now.
Yeah. It's, yeah. So why don't we dive right in?
Yeah, let's start with the two left over, unless you've got others that are left over. But there are two significant ones that I want to kind of at least go into because they're really, really good, and they are left over from spring, and they're leading into the summer now. So the first one is probably the most obvious for everyone, and it's the one that I would say, if it was any other year, I would think that this one has an extremely strong contention, and it still might. I mean, it's a really well-rounded one, but it's Demon Slayer. And I'm just... New thing, I'm going to try to, like, give the little synopsis, but Demon Slayer, basically... Guy's sister turns into a demon after his entire family is killed, and he becomes a demon slayer, kind of this guild or this faction that hunts demons down. He becomes that to, one, try to get his sister to be returned back to human to find out if that's even possible, and two, to seek revenge on the demon that slaughtered his family. So it obviously started in the spring of 2019, and now it is, I don't know if I'm not going to say wrapping up, but it is probably finishing the first season now of what I hope will be multiple seasons in the summer.
Yeah, that seems about accurate. It's I'd say that this anime probably flew under the radar of a lot of people when it first dropped. I watched it right from the get-go.
Same.
Because I saw Ufotable attached to it, and I immediately nutted all over my computer. I was like, oh man, I'm ready. Hit me with it.
Yep.
And I was on it right away. I feel like
a hipster.
Kind of a hipster where I'm like, oh, I liked Demon Slayer before it was cool. Because now, of course, anybody who's even moderately dialed into the anime community heard about how episode 17? 19?
Yes.
19. That trended on Twitter in America.
Did it really?
Yes. So when it dropped, it was trending on Twitter in America, and like that's a big deal. It's very uncommon for anime to make that kind of an impact. But episode 19 was I would say probably the biggest single episode culturally of anime this season, just because...
Slight correction, I think it was 20, because that's Pretend Family, and I think that's the one with... Or unless it's a different one, but I thought it was... This is the episode...
With the fight.
Yeah,
the one with the fire. You know the one I'm talking about.
Oh, okay, wait. Before we go further, anyone listening to this, every single show on this list that we're going to be talking about is probably going to be spoiled for you in some way. We'll try to be vague on certain, like, huge reveals or something, but you can pretty much guarantee that
if Richard's a good editor,
he
can keep track of time. You can keep track of timestamps and list them in the comments,
yes.
And then you can skip ahead of whatever you don't want spoiled,
because
that way we don't have to censor ourselves.
If you are not able to see the comments, though, this is the list that I have right now, and if you don't want anything spoiled, then check the comments to know when to skip things. But we are going to be talking about Demon Slayer, we're going to be talking about Fruits Basket, we're going to be talking about Carol on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about Fire Force, How Heavy Are the Dumbbells You List? Lift, If It's For My Daughter, I'd Even Defeat a Demon Lord, Copcraft, Vinland Saga, Dr. Stone, Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, Lord Elmaloids, The Suckers, Case Files, Rail Zeppelin, Grace Note, longest title for...
Take a breath, Jesus.
And that's pretty much it. The rest, I'm going to touch on Isekai Cheat Magician, but it's not going to be extensive. You should be safe. So,
yeah.
Demon Slayer, now we're into the spoiler zone. You've had your warning.
Yeah.
But so, this is the episode with the fire, kind of, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big episode.
Right.
The one where he fights the head of the, like, spider family.
Yeah. I can't... it's either 20 or 19. That was a really long arc, to be fair.
Right. It was... So, I would say this is kind of a weird show in that it's... Now it's got all this attention and everything. And I guess it's a shonen title. The source material is a shonen manga,
yep.
So there's, of course, a lot to draw from there. What would you say are your overall impressions of Demon Slayer? Not just that one episode. I mean, we can talk about that one episode, but
as
a whole.
So to also be hipster-like starting out is I also jumped on the show immediately. This was, like, all the fanboys were, like, really high on Rising the Shield Hero because of the, you know, controversial and strong opening in the show. And it had a strong opening, I'll give it that. But it's funny how, like, that show just completely petered off and, like, went horribly, like, just bad by the end of the season. And this show only kept, like, gaining momentum to this fight where it was one of the most, like, breathtakingly gorgeous, like, cinematography that I've seen in anime.
We'll get to that.
But in my overall opinion of the show, yeah, it was interesting because it starts off with a good premise because it's not a one premise kind of a show. It's not like, oh, I need to get my sister back to be a human. Well, that's a very ambiguous, vague thing, and I can almost feel the shonen trope, like the thing you find in a lot of shonens where it's just like, well, in 1,000 episodes, he finally figured, like, that's the kind of feel to it. But, like, if that's fine, like, you can make a show with that, and there are people who are able to be okay with that kind of a grind, but this show has two premises, and you can easily have solve one premise in a short term, and then still have the long-term one to make a show go long, but also have little checkpoints to break it up, and that's the revenge storyline. So, like, you can easily have him find and try to seek out revenge. That's a much more easy and attainable kind of a goal. And I really like that to kind of come into the show. And then, of course, it's Ufotable, and I think the scene that sealed the deal for me was, like, I think in the second episode or third episode where his sister comes in and just kicks the head off of a demon and it's just like this super pan shot because Ufotable loves to do this and it's just so well animated and I was just like, yeah, this is how you do it. This is everyone else, listen up. And the art style is so good and unique because it's kind of like a comic book but in this like a very Japanese kind of water painted style and stuff. I think there's a more official rule.
There's a very distinctive art style. It's very old world Japanese, yes. It's kind of ironic that in anime, a Japanese medium, you don't really see this sort of art style that much. I would say, yeah. I'd say outside of, well, not recently, I'd say Rurouni Kenshin used to have this sort of character designs and art style.
Yes.
I would say some of your more traditional, like classic anime probably do, but recent anime mostly have westernized or fantasy character designs that don't do sort of shogun era Japan.
Yeah, I think that the world itself, like, yeah, it's weird that we don't see it like this. I think the only other one I could think was the Golden Kamuy, where it wasn't a shogun thing, but it was very much like, oh wow, it's interesting to see, you know, an anime actually talk about the Japanese history, because they do have a very rich history of a lot of material that they could delve into that you just don't see that often. And I will say that unlike Rurouni Kenshin, this feels like it was painted, like at certain points, it feels like it was literally painted in the Shogun era, like with the same sort of art style. And like a lot of the fights and a lot of the things end up coming out like as if it's a painting in motion. And it's really, really cool to see pulled off.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the strongest shows of the year, let alone the season. I would say, like, as far as, like, not to suck Ufotable's dick too hard, but they're at the top of their game in this.
Yeah.
The dynamic camera movement, everything that they've learned from each show that they do seems to build on the last, and then, like, the dynamic camera movement is very reminiscent of how they animated the Fate Zero, Unlimited Blade Works, and it's just absolutely stunning. And the character designs are very well done. I would say if there's one thing that I maybe have a complaint about, it's that the tendency, and I don't know how much of this isn't really to blame on Ufotable, because as far as I understand, it's pretty much like drawn, like, it honors the source material pretty well.
Yeah, this would be more a critique on the source material for letting itself do this.
I would say that there is a tendency to boil down a lot of the characters into one distinctive character trait, which can occasionally be annoying. So I would say our favorite Zappy Boy, what's his face? Fuck, what's his name again?
Man, hang on. Let me see if I can.
Zenitsu,
yeah. Zenitsu. And yeah.
So
Inosuke.
And then Inosuke. I would say the introductory episodes for Zenitsu were a little difficult to get through because he's just so annoying, yeah. And like the cowardly aspect. I get it. I get it. Like, you know, it's one of those things where if you want to do that the first episode and then like dial it back a little bit, yep. That would be nice. I get what they're trying to do. Like, you're trying to establish him at the base point of his lowest point and then build him up from there. And the same with Inosuke.
My issue is that, like, they're taking so long to sort of, like, keep this... the personality trait I think that most people would find absolutely grating on these two characters is how loud they are and how, like, screaming and, like, with Zenitsu... Oh, my gosh. Help me.
Zenitsu.
It's this, like, panicked, like, I'm not listening, oh my god, and it's just like, dude, chill. I don't need him to be, like, absolutely calm in all the scenarios, but I just need him to dial it back from, like, the 14 he's on to, like, get it down to, like, a 7 or an 8.
Well, this is the same thing that used to annoy me about certain shonen protagonists like Naruto or Eren from Attack on Titan, and why it was one of the big reasons that I stopped watching Attack on Titan.
The reason I didn't watch Black Clover, because I started the first episode and I was like, and I'm out.
Shouty, screamy protagonist. Yeah. It's so irritating. And in this one, of course, that's not the protagonist, the main protagonist. It's one of the side characters. But those two or three episodes were pretty much focused on Zenitsu and Inosuke. And it was annoying. It was very irritating. And I think they were the lowest rated episodes so far this season, yeah. According to my anime list. And I definitely see why. And like, this isn't to say that I don't think that I'm going to like those characters. I do.
Yeah. There is something there that we could still grab out of, as episode 17 shows, the you must master a single thing kind of flashbacks.
That was really well done. It was really good. And it's like,
except. Because they still can't, because the source material still has to fall into a trope. It doesn't want to just give him an ability where he's a sword fighter. It's just like, here's a gimmick I'm going to throw in one more time, and that's he can't fight unless he's unconscious.
Well, here's the thing, though. He seems to be aware of his ability, at least in that episode.
Yeah, because there's other moments where
I'm really hoping that they cast that aside.
I hope so, too.
It is a very irritating gimmick that I have no patience for, really.
Yep.
I like what they're doing with Inosuke.
I'm surprised about what they kind of did with him. And I'm tentatively optimistic with Inosuke, because it's just like, okay, we could... Because he just got beaten really bad, and his pride is now in shambles.
He was humbled, and his pride was broken, so now it's going to be up to him to... And that's the thing, like, Tanjiro is by far the strongest character in the show, because he's a new breed of shonen protagonist, and I believe that
he's willing to listen, and that's rare in anime in general, and it seems like it's rare in this show as well, with like how
it might have been Giguk that said this, it was either him or Mother's Basement that they talked about how he's very kind.
Yes.
Which I think is kind of your typical shonen protagonist is like either prideful or vengeful or whatever. Yeah. But Tanjiro isn't like that. He kills with kindness and respect, and he's very... he's just so sweet. I think he's kind of running away with best boy at this point.
Yes, I think so too. I think like we talked about this in our spring part of the first half episode, and that was how similar he is to Mob from Mob Psycho. In the sense that he's not...
There is a similarity there.
He's not trying... Like, he doesn't want to have to fight. And the way he approaches when he attacks these demons, especially the one mother... Well, quote-unquote mother.
Oh, the spider mom.
And it was just, like, this most, like, merciful, like, I'm really sorry that this happened to you kind of a thing. Which is interesting because you got the butterfly girl who is sort of, like, hoping that she can just fake it until she makes it with the same thing. And she very much... as it was revealed in the most recent episode, very much hates demons with a passion, and so it's sort of, but she wants to like carry on a different value of somebody else. So it's interesting to sort of see this foil going on, and to see also Tanjiro trying to, like, because, you know, he's got his sister who's a demon, so he's hoping that if his sister can be, like, obviously it's a misfortune for her, other people are also in this misfortune, and he would rather not have to end them by killing them, but hopefully find a different solution.
Right. So one more, I mean, I don't want to, like, talk about it forever, right. But so I guess one more thing I want to point out as far as, like, things I'm worried about with this show before we talk, I guess, a little more about, like, more sucking of the penis about episode 19 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
One thing, so...
That whole arc was just, like, money.
It was really, really good. The show really paces itself well in that it's a very fast-paced, very action-heavy, and it tells its story and characterization through action, which is cool. And there's no filler, and now it's finally slowing down a little bit to introduce more lore after the end of that arc. And this is where I'm starting to be concerned.
Yes.
Not because of anything that they've done, but because of what might happen. So they've introduced the... I can't remember what they're called because it's a Japanese word.
Hishami?
Hashiras,
yes.
Yes. So this is where I'm concerned is like, oh, I've seen this before. This is like the Bleach, like, you know, the Soul Society in Bleach, or this is like whatever, pick your shonen trope where it's like you've got some sort of organization that does something, hunts some monsters or kills whatever, and they have leaders, which are like, you're 10 or 12 or 9 or 7 or whatever, you know, really strong dudes. And they're each boiled down to one character trait, one defining character trait. And usually they're poorly characterized. And at some point your protagonist is probably going to have to beat a couple of them and or ally with a couple of the others.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, I'm concerned. I'm officially worried.
Yeah.
Because I've seen this before. And the bigger thing with me is the introduction of them to me was it left a lot wanting, because it literally was each, like, the character designs are very distinct, which is good. However, their introductions of each of the Hashira was pretty much like, hey, this is the angry one. This is the quiet one. This is the aloof one.
This is the slutty one.
And some of them had overlapping character traits where I was like, wow, I can't distinguish you two because you're fucking the same. And I'm like, oh man, I hope, because here's what, like, in my head, I'm like, if I were going to write this in the most shonen way possible, like, there's some sort of sinister plot behind the Demon Slayer core that, like, it's like, oh, this is in Bleach, it would be the Aizen character. Or if we're talking about Full Metal Alchemist, it would be the, you know, the president character.
Yeah.
It would be like the general or whatever the hell his name. Yeah, it's like there's going to be some sort of sinister plot going on, whether the leader is involved in it or not, whatever, and it'll be a roadblock for and a plot device for Tanjiro to fight several of the Hashira, and you know, it'll be a stumbling block on his way to defeating, or the bigger trope would be that somehow the Demon Slayer Corps is responsible for the demons in the first place.
Yeah.
Or that what's his face?
The main demon guy, Kibit. Yeah. Oh man, I cannot pronounce this. I don't think I even was able
we'll call him Mr. K.
Yeah.
Mr. K used to be like allied with the Demon Slayer Corps in some fashion or something, that he used to be a Demon Slayer or whatever.
I would prefer him being used to be a Demon Slayer over that the Demon Slayer Corps is the responsible, like, there's something rotten in Denver kind of a thing. Or Denmark. That place too.
Denmark. So, I don't know. I talked a lot about that. Those are my concerns.
No, those are exactly the same concerns as mine, because the problem I have with a lot of anime, and why I really liked a lot of the new animes, because they don't do this as often, but it's they throw out a bunch of characters that sound unique and expect you to remember them all, and expect them all to be memorable, and they're all just these goofy tropes that don't actually do anything for the plot. They don't do anything for the character. My hope, though, is because of how the show has gone so far, two things I think stand out. The first is that we didn't immediately start having all these characters jump in at us. We had the two episodes where he kind of met them, and then it just went with the butterfly chick, the girl, the main one, the one that brought him back in for healing.
Shinobu,
thank you. And I think that that's the right way to go because it slows down the introduction for all these guys. And I think that with how the second thing is, the show does how Tanjiro just listens and he just tries to understand and help. And I think that with how the first, with how Shinobu is, she has some serious qualms and her sister got killed and she's upset with how these, like, these demons are, and she thinks that they're all super unforgivable for what they've done, even though her sister wanted to be friends with them before getting killed by one. I think that there's something with how Tanjiro can help her, and I think that that might be how the show ends up going instead, with how, like, each of these, they're going to be battles, but not in a we're fighting sword against sword, but battles in a sort of, like, philosophical sense of, like, hey, once again, it's the static protagonist of, like, this is the way I see the world, and everyone else kind of has to start sort of adjusting of being like, you know, the way he sees it is kind of right. And I hope that that's the way the show goes. There's no way to say whether or not it is, but I'm hoping because of how the show has gone so far and that it's ufotable, hopefully we end up going down that path. But obviously there is reasons to be concerned because of characters like Zensuke. Oh my god, I still can't say his name.
Zenitsu
and Inosuke, because of, like, those kind of characters exist with, like, this very undeveloped feel to them, that there's a chance that the show could also do the same thing to the Hashira. So we'll see. This is something that, like, basically I'm going to be, like, super doubting of the show until it ends, and then I'll be like, wow, they didn't do it, that's awesome. Yeah. And I hope that's how it goes.
I feel like we, I don't know, it sounds like I was, like, shitting on it there. It's a great show.
No, it's
it
a really great show. Like, yeah, so far.
And the animation is literally top-notch. Yep. So.
Yeah, yeah. If you liked Fate Zero or Fate Stay Night of Limited Blade Works, or if you saw the movie Fate Heaven's Feel, or Fate Stay Night Heaven's Feel, then you're going to like this show. I also recommend Garden of Sinners, because that's basically where this style for ufotable was born, was them doing it in that show, and now they just have refined it to a T, and it's just fantastic. So all right, let's move on. We talked a lot about the Demon Slayer. Let's move on. The other one that's continued that's been really good, Fruits Basket. Ian, how far are you? Have you caught up with the most recent episode, or are you coupled back?
I have, I believe that I'm one back from the, because I finished the Wave Girl.
Okay.
Background episode.
Yeah, yeah, you're not too
so
far away.
I think I'm one episode behind.
Okay, that's not bad then. Yeah, the most recent one is the most recent two, I guess. So I don't know if you were there when Toru got sick.
Yes. Oh, yes, I saw the first part of that.
Okay.
What I'm assuming is like a two-parter.
Yeah, kind of.
I haven't seen the second part.
It's basically that's going to be the arc for the redhead guy. I cannot remember his name, but the
Kyo?
Actually, I think it's Kyo.
It's Kyo.
The guy
Kyo and Yuki.
The cat. Yeah, it's Kyo.
Yeah,
Kyo. Yep. So it's basically his. So we've gotten an episode now for what's her name? Yutani, the biker gang girl, and we've got the background episodes of Hanajima, the wave girl.
Hanajima, yeah.
And now it's that guy's turn.
Kyo.
Yeah. I can't keep all these anime names straight. but it's been... I've started to actually really enjoy this show more and more as it's kind of gone on. It is super emotionally charged, and I think it's kind of interesting how even though it's doing a format of essentially Monster of the Week, but with like an emotional train wreck of a person as a monster instead, it doesn't waste any of its time in the episode, and it really still packs a punch when it needs to for each of these, like, problem children and stuff, and I am pleasantly surprised by how well it does.
Yeah, this show is a slow burn. Yep. Like it is, and I mean that's fine. I like it. It's good. It's very wholesome. It's kind of, remember that show last season that I told you I watched a couple episodes of, the one with the Senko-san.
The Fox Girl.
The Fox Girl. Yeah.
That was a winner.
That was purported to be like soul, like food for your soul, yeah. And like warm fuzzies. And I like completely rejected it because I was like, this doesn't make me feel any better. Like this is, it's too contrived. It's fantasy wish fulfillment bullshit. Yep. And so,
yeah, I watched it way past the point you did. And I can still confirm it doesn't fix anything. It just goes for the symptoms. And that's it. Yeah. The problem still is there.
Just utter bullshit. Like, yeah. And I don't want to get back into Senko-san, but like Fruits Basket that's how you do wholesome anime, yes. In my opinion, because like it's real characters, real story. It is, if you're looking for something that shows its hand about like the main storyline, don't. Like, that's not happening this season.
No, definitely not. There's still a lot of mystery about, like...
They literally are introducing all of the cast through season one. Like, holy shit! Like, it's a 26-episode season, and they're just now finished introducing all of the cast of this show.
Yes.
Which is insane.
But I love how they've done it, too. God. Because, like, again, like, my biggest problem with, like, Demon Slayer almost did, which was, like, here's a bunch of Hashime... Get to know them because, you know, they're one-note people and they're caricatures and that's how you'll remember them. And isn't this an interesting design? Go make some sweet character fan art on DeviantArt, you sluts.
Right. And the Fruits Basket characters feel like real characters, yes. Like fleshed out characters, like with histories and backstories and
problems and that you can like make sense. And with problems that a lot of people I think could relate to, or at least problems like you could find other people having dealt with and stuff. Like it's a very grand for a show that's about like people representing zodiac
turning
animals,
into zodiac. And yeah, turning we didn't into even talk about what this was about. Yeah. Fruits Basket is a show about a girl named Toru who befriends members of this family, this old family. Who have members of their family, not all of the members, but like some of the members of their family are somehow tied to the zodiac spirit animals and can transform into those animals either when they're very tired or when they are hugged by a member of the opposite sex.
That is not also a zodiac animal.
Right. And that sounds really trashy, but it's not because like for whatever, like it sounds just ridiculous and trashy and whatnot, but I'm like, oh, it's actually super wholesome. It's the anti-harem.
Yeah. It really is, and it does a thing where, like, it doesn't treat these, like, oh, they can turn into animals as, like, a seven deadly sins bullshit. It's, this is a curse kind of a feel to right. It, and that these people have to kind of deal with this weird affliction on them, and as a result, the family's called the Soma clan, and they basically shield themselves off from the rest of the world, so that way that people don't have to get freaked out that... So-and-so just turned into a rat, or so-and-so is able to turn into a dog when, like, some girl who liked him touched him, or braced him. That's the key thing. A slap on the back, I don't think, will turn Yuki into right. A rat. But anyway, it's really, really good in the way it slows down the introduction for everyone, because everyone kind of gets their episode, or if they're really connected to Toru, they get almost two episodes as a background, but...
That's how you judge a character's importance. It's yes. Like how many episodes of introduction do they get?
Yeah, and then, or it, you know what's interesting is like we get the one girl, the really quiet one who turns into, I forget what her animal is.
Oh,
the one
I don't remember which animal, the bully, but I know who you're talking
yeah,
about. The one that didn't talk.
Yeah.
For like, yeah.
The bullying arc. And so like, not only does she get
Tiger.
Tiger. The tiger. Yes, that's it. So not only does she get her episode of introduction and helpful, but she's been popping up slowly and surely to kind of like, because, you know, there's ramifications. It's not just a monster of the week thing now. It is, well, now that so-and-so got like over the, well, at least mostly over their emotional baggage, the ramification is, oh, I kind of like hanging out with this person who understands me. And the show allows people to return, even though like, you know, they've been resolved. So it's nice because it feels like, you know, how it would work in the real life.
Yeah, and I would say the thing that makes the show go round is Toru's character.
Yes.
This really has been the year of kind protagonists.
Yes.
Because Toru is very similar to Tanjiro in the fact that she hasn't met anybody that she can't treat with kindness.
Yep.
She's just, that's how she do.
Toru and Tanjiro, my OTP.
Yeah, exactly. And you love her for it. And the one thing, the show doesn't treat all of the male characters as potential love interests for Toru, which I appreciate.
Yes.
Which would be an easy trap for the show to fall into, and which another show on this list has fallen into, and we'll get to that. But
it's mostly just two guys, and even those two, you're not 100% sure
that they're going to go that route.
Yeah, you could.
It's very slow burn.
Yeah, and I appreciate that dramatically, emphatically.
Yeah, so I mean, it's wholesome. I don't think there's any other word for it.
Just yeah.
if you want to watch a show that'll make you feel warm and fuzzy, and maybe make you tear up, and like it's a cinnamon roll.
Yes, it is.
It's a cinnamon roll of a show. It's like if Uraraka was a show.
Yeah. You know,
like just her. I imagine that she would be like that. She would, if you dropped her into a show completely surrounded, like centered around her as like a super kind hearted protagonist.
It's,
I feel like that's what it would be.
It is like a cinnamon roll, but it's got a side of incest. Because
so yeah, this right. I want to hear you because I have a different opinion on this.
It's something where I have been kind of pushing it to the side for a while now because I'm like, okay, it's a clan, right? They're not all blood related. They're not. They kind of are.
My impression was that they're not.
It's
a clan.
Yes and no, kind of a thing. It feels like some of them are definitely more closer with each other than others in terms of like cousins or something. I think the girl who can turn into a pig, or the hog or whatever, the boar, she's cousins with, Kyo, the cat. I think that's what they established in there. But listen, all these I've been pushing aside until we got to the one where the girl is bullied and her brother comes in. And it becomes extremely obvious that he's not caring for her as an overprotective brother. It's he's in love with her and wants to be her Prince Charming. And even goes so far as having a scene of memory.
It says that they're
I know, but that's
brother.
Why it's so much worse. Because it's like, oh, this is fine. Let's just keep this going. It's just like, stop encouraging him. Stop it.
So I guess usually this stuff would bother me. Like, usually I'm the first one to say, like, this would bother me.
Yeah.
I think the reason it doesn't is because they kind of go to great lengths to paint the Somas as this sort of, like, old world clan where it's, like, relationships go through the family and it's kind of like an old royal family in a way, but they're not all related. So I've just chosen to be, like, assume if there's a romantic interest that they're not related, and I ignore any potential.
Like, just turn your blind eye. It's fine. It's
I mean, but like they kind of play it up in that vein, right? That like marrying outside of the clan is not something that the matriarch or the patriarch. Oh, am I the only one that thought that Akito was a chick?
I thought so too.
I was so sure that she was a chick until finally it was revealed that's a dude. I'm like, are you fucking kidding
even
me?
When it was revealed, I still thought, I was like, are you sure? Are you that's a girl?
Like, what the fuck? Anyway, the drawings
of this is a little weird sometimes when like you can't tell
we were
the gender
away
of people.
From this in anime. I thought in anime we were getting away from this, but now it's like we're back.
Yep. So,
like, all right, whatever. Anyway, so I mean, I guess I get why it bothers you, but because of how it's framed, like, so it bothers me way more in shows like Sword Art Online.
Yes,
because it's a conventional family archetype, like a conventional family unit.
Yeah.
More or less, like even though they weren't blood related, they grew up in a conventional family where that's not something that is supposed to be okay.
Right.
But the Somas, it's pretty much implied that they sort of keep relationships in the family as much as possible because of the nature of their affliction.
Yeah. because you can, like, embrace
going
someone
outside of it usually ends poorly.
Yeah,
remember, like the doctor, yep. Right? He wanted to get married to that girl outside of the family, and it ended very badly.
Yes, and the same thing with you'll see with Kyo, his thing. Well, actually, his is different, but it's kind of similar. They because of the fact that they can only embrace people of the same or different sex who are part of this clan without having to turn into animals, it's basically, they don't even have to really encourage it. It's basically, like, implied that, like, if you want an easier life, you stick with people that aren't going to turn you back into your animal when they hug you.
Right.
And so,
it's,
yeah.
It's kind of emotionally, it would be emotionally difficult.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
But yeah, I mean, it's not, listen, it's nothing, like, that completely kills the show for me, because it's so vague that you're never really sure. That's not something that's going to derail it or distract.
Well, they
much.
Don't loot it.
They that's don't. The yeah, thing. That's the other thing. Oh,
because the brother sister aspect of something like Sword Art Online, I always got the impression that it was played as fan service, yes, for the degenerate parts of the community.
Can I just say that, like, I have a theory about why, like, the incest fantasy is so popular with people. Can I take a moment to explain my...
I can't believe that we're going
so,
this way,
and it's
okay.
It's not too bad. So my theory isn't the fact that people actually want to have sex with their sister or their cousin or anything like that. My theory is that it's the roommate kind of scenario. The idea is that this is a person you've known for a while, and they get you completely, and you've lived together, and it's just, like, a matter of convenience. And you're just like, well, one thing led to another, and it just finally happened. But, like, for some reason, they don't want to ever just keep making everyone roommates, because I guess that would be uncommon or something, and they'd rather just do it with the person closest, which is a sister or a mother or a stepsister or cousin. God, I wish it was just stepsisters. We wouldn't have this conversation.
So,
but that's
so
my theory.
Like, I have a different theory,
all right,
which I didn't think we were talking about this, but I guess we're talking about this, and mine is, like, much more sinister.
Okay.
Who are the people that usually, like, watch shows like that? They're typically your shut-in, mouth-breather, degenerate parts of the
community. As Araragi says in Monogatari, it's people who actually don't have sisters.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I think, this is, you can feel free to disagree, but I thought probably more about this than it deserves. Because I'm like, why the fuck is this a thing?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I think I get it. Because most of the time when you see elements of, like, for Sword Art Online is the low-hanging fruit, but it's a really great example to illustrate my point, is you see the incest bait and switch a lot with shows that are either also power fantasies, like the harem stuff,
yeah,
or that are watched by the same people who watch those power fantasies. And I think, and this is why I say that this is kind of sinister,
okay,
is that it plays into, it's kind of a different aspect of the power fantasy, because you have here a female character that is doing something or wants to do something that is against societal norms, but they're so overcome with desire for the protagonist that they do it anyway, or they express that desire anyway. So in a way, it's a sort of method of having power over somebody, in this case, a sibling. So the, what's his fit? Kirito's sister. This is a perfect example.
I think she's his cousin, to be honest. Or but, well, no, you know, yeah, what? I think they changed it to be, I think it is his sister, but I think, right, they changed it, but for, like, America to be cousin, because that's,
right,
better.
So whatever, she is clearly distraught by the fact that, because she knows that it's wrong, but she wants it anyway, and they clearly lewd her through the show, yeah, you know, like, by playing up her physical aspects. So people who enjoy the power fantasy elements of isekai, where they're like, hey, we like this main character who has all of these abilities and is really strong, we also like the fact that he exudes a sexual aura that's so strong that even his relatives cannot help but fall in love with him, even though it's wrong and taboo. Like, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing.
It's
like
a method of control and power of, like, in a sexual way,
yep,
that they're like, oh, but they want it. It's not like he's going out raping people, because that would be wrong.
Right.
But because he is he's just unknowingly having, it's kind of the natural evolution of the harem anime, where it's like, what's more extreme than having just every girl like the main character? What if his siblings also liked yep. him?
Well, it's and I'll take it only half a step further. It's because the power, it's a power fantasy of like, when you're in these power fantasy kind of shows, it's, you get basically everything handed to you, and you are becoming like, basically, what else can you get? What else can you, like, what else is yours? And it's so powerful that you break through these taboos to also claim your sisters and your cousins and your mothers or whatever, because God, your dick's so big, that's what you got. Like, you're just the most powerful thing in the world, and of course everything is yours. So yeah it's I could see that
it's
too.
It's a power fantasy. I think it's just a natural evolution of the power fantasy, yep. which makes it really degenerate. And that's one of the reasons why the Fruits Basket aspect does not bother me.
Yeah, you're right.
It's never played that way.
Nope. It's a lot more wholesome about it, and it also, again, it's vague. It barely even confirms it. So it makes it so it's not, and it's never been about those relationships either. The issue has always been about these people and having to deal what has emotionally scarred them while they grew up, dealing with this curse, dealing with, like, the other members of the Soma clan kind of, like, trying to keep them all in line. So, yeah. I could see it. Again, it's never been something to bother me, but it is, like, that episode with the brother just kind of came to head, and I'm like, dude, stop. I get you want to protect her, but you've gone a little further than that is the issue I had. But, yeah. All right, do you want to...
So that's my thesis on...
incest?
On incest in anime.
Yeah, well, it is a little more cynical than mine, but I dig it.
I cannot believe that that's where we've gone.
Well, listen, I think that's enough to talk about with Fruits Basket. I think don't let our theories make you think that you shouldn't watch it. It's a really good show.
Well, if anything, that should be an endorsement of it, and it should just say,
not in there.
Or don't watch Sword Art Online.
Don't watch Sword Art Online. Watch Fruits Basket. It's a reverse harem at times because it's a girl with a bunch of guys, but, like, they never really go into it. Like, it's never been about, like, that kind of love. It really is more, like, because of all the other shows out there with how much they do harp on love and they try to, like, make it about, like, oh, I'm in love with this person, it will seem like this show does that, but it's very much about broken families finding themselves and putting themselves back together with new pieces kind of mixed in to try to be whole. And it's about that. It's not about, like, well, I'm in love.
The whole irony, the whole dramatic irony is that Toru is, like, this sort of lonely, like, not lonely, but, like, so alone person who comes in to this huge family, and she ends up being the family for all of these people who are yep. already related, and, like, she fixes their family when she doesn't really have one of her own anymore.
Yep. And I think that's why I love this show so much, because of how she is with, like, yeah, she just doesn't let anything, like, nothing phases her. I mean, things phase her, but, like, she doesn't let that be the end judgment. Like, she's willing to try to wait and see the whole picture before she makes a... She doesn't make snap decisions. She's able to say, okay, well, this looks bad, but what else is there to see? And I like that.
Yep.
So, all right, let's move on to Carol and Tuesday.
Woohoo!
All right, Ian, did you finish this anime?
No,
damn it!
I haven't. I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
I actually haven't watched any more.
Oh, God!
I've been busy with work, and then yesterday I had, like, a bunch of social obligations. So, like, we can still talk about
it,
but it's just, like,
okay.
Just not as spoilery.
Oh, man. So, I kind of knew that this would be kind of special based on the clip that Gig got
provided.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
Question. Is only the first part on Netflix right now?
I don't know if there's a second part. I didn't know.
How many episodes?
It's 12 episodes.
I'm pretty sure that it has a 24 episode.
Oh, God, I hope someone will look
release.
For that.
So I think they only put the first 12 on Netflix, and I think the second 12 is still airing, and that's why it's not on there.
Oh, God, yes. Okay, good. Okay, but here's the thing. Those 12 episodes are damn good. Like, it's so complete feeling, even without being... I mean, like, it still hangs a little bit off to the side where you're like, oh, I wonder what they were talking about in the very beginning, that 7-minute miracle. That's still not quite finished, wrapped up, because it's still building up. But, like, that 12th episode is such a good finale that you're like, wow, I feel satisfied. So, Carol and Tuesday, it's about two girls, Carol and a girl named Tuesday, who... Tuesday is in a royal... She's rich, and she runs away from home and meets Carol, and they form a band, and they play songs. That's basically the premise. Oh, but it's on Mars.
Yes, it's so, and like at first I thought it was a sci-fi gimmick, yes. But then I was like, oh, this makes sense, because it's in a future where music is almost entirely created by artificial intelligence, yep. That real human songwriters don't really exist anymore. So that's sort of the angle, is that Carol and Tuesday write their own songs, and so they're theoretically, their human songs, their own written songs should be, like, they should triumph and be popular because it adds an element of human warmth that is, like, increasingly removed from this futuristic society.
Yes, exactly so. And there's times where you can hear, like, so I don't think you're on this part yet, but, like, when they get to the tournament arc!
tournament!
I cannot believe that they found a way to put a tournament arc in here, but, like, they did.
Is it, like, an Idol kind
yes,
of thing?
Yes! It's literally like American Idol.
Oh, man.
And it's so cool, and it's, like... But I'm like, I cannot believe that they found a way to do that. And also, like, I can't believe I didn't think that they wouldn't be able to find a way. Like, it's... So, like, but you can hear some of the other competitors in this competition, and, like, when Angela gets up, the main, I don't know if I could call her antagonist, because for most of the show, she doesn't...
Well, antagonist doesn't mean evil.
Yeah, true.
Antagonist just means the foil for the protagonist, and they're certainly building her up as
right.
a foil.
Right, but up until, like, it, especially, I think you're 5 or 6 episodes in, Ian...
Yeah, I think 5.
She has yet to interact with them.
Right, she hasn't, but they've definitely spent a lot of time developing her to where I see where they're going.
Right, she's definitely the foil to them. And you could hear when she finally starts to do her songs, you're like, man, this would fool a lot of people who listen to this kind of crap on the radio and want to have this, like, this is their song or whatever. Like, not to throw people under the bus, but like she has a sound that sounds very much like Rihanna or Ariana Grande or like even Britney Spears at a certain point. Like or Miley Cyrus would probably be the best example. And it just sounds fake sometimes. Like some of her songs, when compared and seen how this show builds it up, it sounds so like generic. But like the most refined generic you could ever find, it's so odd to hear it when after Carol and Tuesday go on. So
right. So this can I like tell a quick story here?
Yeah, go for it.
So this is I want to talk about, because I know you want to talk about this too. Is the biggest strength, at least for me so far with this show, is definitely the songs.
Yep.
And so the first song that they really, you know, that they sort of, the one that they jam out to and create in their, second episode together?
Yeah, first episode. Loneliest Girl.
It's so good. And that's the whole beauty of this show is songwriting and music in general is really hard.
Yes.
Like, it's really hard to come up with something that's just amazing. And it really punches you in the gut. And I wanted to perform an experiment.
Okay.
So Susan and I went to the gym this morning, and when we were going to the gym, I put on, because I had the song downloaded from iTunes, and I put it
on. Oh, so you heard Susan. Oh, man, that means you got to hear the full version, because it gets good.
I put the song on when we were driving to the gym, not telling Susan anything about it, nothing.
I've done this experiment at work. Okay, continue. Yeah.
And so we're on the way to the gym, and Susan's like, where'd you find this artist?
She's
like, she listened to the whole, like, I was like, oh, I'll tell you afterwards. And she just listens to the whole song,
yep.
And she was like, this is really good. Like, and she was like, pretty immediately, she's like, where did you find this song? Like, it's really good. And like afterwards, I was like, this is from an anime. She was like, get out.
This is a soundtrack from an anime.
Yeah. But like, it's, I cannot overstate, and I haven't, like, this thing, I'm only 5 episodes in, I know there are other songs,
yeah.
But it's so good, it might be one of the better songs that I've listened to this whole year.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good, and it's just, it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
I wish there was a category with the Crunchyroll Awards for, like, best song.
Yeah, best period. Okay, so this show reminds me of how I felt about Megalobox. in terms of, like, this would live and die without the soundtrack. And
yes, the music is so key.
It's so key into it, and for different reasons, because obviously Megalobox was not about singing and stuff, but, like, the songs and the soundtrack were so integral into, like, the atmosphere and the way the universe and world was kind of built up that, like, you could not imagine it without it. And this, like, right. The Carol and Tuesdays, their songs and the way the soundtrack plays off and all the other artists that eventually come in, like, if any one of those were less, this show would fall apart so badly. Like, it would just not pound in the impact of what they are doing.
Well, because it's not an idol show.
No.
Like, we should get that out of the way right away.
It's
like,
it's like a garage band kind of show. It's probably so, like, how people thought K-On! Felt. Although I've never watched K-On!, so I don't want to make that comparison without actual, like...
would say, like, Zombieland Saga. Like, that's an idol show.
Very much an idol show.
But the thing is, like, Zombieland Saga was first and foremost about the humor,
yep,
and about the character's humor playing off of the manager and stuff like that. And the songs were kind of secondary. And this show is first and foremost a drama. And so because it's not playing for laughs, that emphasizes even more on the music. And what you were saying is if the music didn't hit and it didn't hit really hard, it wouldn't work as a show.
Right. It's hard. So I would say, what's your favorite song? But you haven't heard them all. And honestly,
yeah, so I can't say.
Even if you did, I still think it would probably still be Loneliest Girl. Because where that song, that the final, because they do eventually sing the iTunes version of it at the end. And where that show kind of, or show, where that song goes, I feel like it's so, like, so strong. And I feel like the show is built around that song. That's how strong this song is. That it's hard for me to say, like, you know, Angela's Light a Fire song is actually, for how generic it could be, I could literally hear this song on the radio, someone playing it and being like, this is a song, like, who is this? Is this Ariana Grande? What is this? No, it's the soundtrack. Like, that's how much I love this song. It's so good. And I kind of feel like even if you heard all the other songs, you probably would still say it. But I will say that some of the other ones, like Someday I'll Find My Way Home, is the one they play in at that gig it's like a bar or something that they get one song for. That one's probably my second favorite. There's something really calming. And I played that one at work as well. And just to hear, I didn't have headphones on. I had it like blaring out into our room or whatever during morning cleaning. And I had, like, an animal control officer guy come by and goes, oh, man, what is this? I'm digging this this piano kind of chill vibe. And I was like, yeah, it's a soundtrack from an anime. He's like, no way. And that's just how good it is. You would not be able to tell the difference. Yeah. And I think that's good, because if you can't tell the difference, then that means it did its job right.
Well, that means that it's art. That means, because it's so not like a traditional soundtrack, it kind of... He is hand in hand with the visuals, but these songs have to exist on their own. Otherwise, they wouldn't be true to life. It's how real music is. The songs have to be able to exist on their own so that people can form their own emotional bonds with them.
Right.
So it's a perfect example, is like letting people listen to it who have no context. Because, of course, when I listen to it, I can picture the anime,
yep,
and like picture them creating the song and stuff like that. But when you have, people who are completely disconnected forming their own bonds with it, then you know that it's transcended it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that is just a mark of how good. And they brought in so many... Mark of how good... Let me finish my sentence before I jump to the next one. Mark of how good the artists were making these songs. And that's another thing. They brought in, like, so many different artists to do these things. And it just really, like... Man, they went above and beyond the Call of Duty. I kind of also feel like this is similar to Radwimps from Your Name, in terms of just like how good that soundtrack was as well, and how much of an extra mile it felt like that the guy and his band did to really punch it home with that. But I just want to kind of, I don't think you'll have as much comment on this part, but like... In the show, the songs work along, obviously you would expect them to, but like it works with the plot a lot of the times, and often either like making commentary on stuff that's happening in the plot as they're singing, or rebuttals, or like almost digs sometimes to other people who are doing things. So, like, Carol and Tuesday play the song Someday I'll Find My Way Home, which is about what you would expect the title to say, which is like, hey, I'm doing my thing, I'll be home. Well, as they're playing it, literally Tuesday's brother is about to walk into the bar with a mission to bring Tuesday home. And it's so interesting how, like, they build up this song to play this, but they don't actually talk about the reason they're going to be playing is because of this, like, message to throw out. But, like, the show just sort of subtly kind of, like, taps the other characters or the audience with this kind of a message. When it gets to the competition, Lost My Way is one that they play, and it's about, like, spirits. And earlier, GGK, this other band, she talks about how she receives spirit messages from the universe. And it's sort of like, okay, well, it seems like almost like they're trying to grab more of the same demographic without actually attending. Like, it's never intentional sounding, but, like, all of a sudden it's as if they have these songs ready to throw out and do a better job than what the copy kind of feels like. Angela, at the same time, does a song, All I Want, and starts talking about, like, in the end, begging for, like, how, like, you know, don't, like, this is, like, she wants to, like, the song's about wanting a guy or something, and she's begging at the end about how worthy she is. And Carol and Tuesday ends Lost My Way with Don't Call Me Lonely, I'm Strong on My Own. Don't Call Me Pretty, I Found My Way Back, and I Learned to Love Me. Like, completely opposite of what Angela's song was about. And then finally, with Light a Fire, Angela has this huge song. And she starts off with talking about loneliness and going into, like, lighting a fire for her soul and how strong she is and stuff like this. And then Carol Tuesday throw out Loneliest Girl, and they start, first line, it's a little cold in paradise. And then Carol's, when she comes in to, like, for her first verse, her question is, do you really want to set the night on fire? And it's like, oh my god, like, you could not have made a better rebuttal to what Angela just did in her song. And it's so cool that the show does that. Like, it's so many times where the show just, like, really, really connects it all together really nice and neat. Like, I love it, man. It's this. This was a show that I knew it was probably going to be special based on what Gigot put the video on, that clip.
Right, but there was a lot of hype.
There was a lot of hype.
Of course, Netflix has to be, like, buttholes and not simulcast.
But, like, watching it and finishing it, I've watched it twice now. I watched it one week, I watched it twice, and I watched the finale three times. And, man, I love this show. This, I did not expect to love it this much. There's so much about this show that I've recommended it to people who don't watch anime. That's how much I love this show. It feels like another potential gateway drug to anime because of how well done and well executed the whole thing is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I completely 100% agree. The episodes I've seen so far are top-notch. The animation is really good. The character designs are fantastic. It's just the voice acting, the songs. It's tremendous. So
tremendous.
Yep. Oh, yeah, it will be 2 12 episode parts.
Oh, yes, more. I just want more. All right, do you want to move on to the next one now? I think we talked enough about Carol and Tuesday. All right, so Fire Force. Before we even begin with Fire Force, I just want to kind of sum up what Fire Force is about. I have a little clip here from That 70s Show, and I'm going to play it real fast here.
Right, so I accidentally shot off a flare, and it went all like right underneath the bleachers.
Well, we've just jumped up to about 60% your fault.
Okay, so then I shot off another flare at the first flare, because you know what they say, you gotta fight fire with fire.
So Fire Force, basically, it's about fighting fire with fire. So it's a bunch of magic mages who can control fire, fighting demons who make fires, alongside actual firefighters. So, Ian, you were the first one to start watching this between the two of us. Yes, what is your takes? Did. Hot takes. Hot takes.
Ha, 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 ha!
Of the show.
That's funny. let's just get it out of the way fast.
Yep.
There's no way to talk about this show without talking about the sort of outside influences. Unfortunately, this show debuted at a the same time where the Kyoto Animation fire happened.
Yeah.
And because of that, there was some mild censoring that happened during the show. They took a week off. And it didn't really affect it too much as far as the, like, the censoring didn't, to me, it didn't, like, it wasn't super obvious or, like, it wasn't, like, no, really bad.
Not at all.
Like that. Yeah. But it was kind of hard to watch it without also knowing about that, which I think kind of was a little bit of a disservice. But I will say that I actually stopped watching this show after episode 6.
Would you say you cooled on it?
I will say that this show probably, the first couple episodes, I was pretty excited. And then, man, did I just lose interest, like, super fast. And I think it's for a couple reasons. Like, I was very high on the show initially because the animation looks really good. It's gorgeous. The flame effects are stunning. It has some really poignant moments because it frames these infernals that they're fighting as, you know, humans who have tragically turned into what do they call infernals, and they have to be killed, but not because it's sort of seen as some sort of like cleansing, helping them to pass on. And there was one particularly poignant moment where there's an infernal who's sitting at a table in the house.
Yes.
And he hasn't like gone on a berserk rage or anything like that, and they kill him in like a very like calm, serene scene, which is very sad. And I thought, man, maybe the show has really something going for it. And then there was an episode with a brother fighting against this other battalion commander, and there's pointless fan service where they burn off the nun costume for one of the characters, and the battalion commander like pointlessly turns good at the end very suddenly, and I was just like, this episode has completely lost me.
Yeah.
And it was so weird. It was just such a, just, it moved too fast. It went from like we're fighting two infernals to there's this plot in Station 5 to Station 5 kidnapped one of our people, we're going to go rescue them, to now Station 5's commander is on our side because they've been redeemed after they were, I guess, evil after a fire burned up all our friends. And it's like, what? Slow the fuck down. Like, what is going on? And I have not watched since then. And it's just, the characters to me, I hate the Arthur character.
Yep.
I can't stand him.
So does the main protagonist.
Like, can't stand him. I don't even really like the main protagonist much. I think he's kind of one note.
Yep.
Where he's just like, he was bullied because he has a weird smile and he, and like they call him the devil because I guess his house burned down, which may or may not have been his fault, but probably wasn't. And like everyone's kind of one note. The characters to me have turned to be kind of boring, and it's just lost me, which is just so weird because I was pretty high on it at the beginning. I'm interested to see if you agree or disagree.
All right, so in comments to your animation thing, because it is good animation, I just want to show you this like clip of the last part of the episode 8 called Inferno Insects. And I don't know if you can hear it, but you don't need to. You just need to see what the animation looks like, because there's something in this that makes me keep watching this show. And so that's how the episode ends. And I just thought that the animation in that end of the show, and that's the end of this thing, the scene of Hibiki, like, tearing up and, like, shaking her head and doing, like, there was something in there. I was like, wow, this was actually, like, long. One, it's longer than you probably actually needed to, but I somehow appreciated the time it took for her not to be able to answer him. Like, he asks her, are you okay? In a very typical hero sort of a stance. And her response is, like, almost completely, like, breaking down about, like, everything that just happened to her. And I...
There was also no dialogue.
No dialogue, like, at all. And
she could have just easily, like, gave a sassy comment or whatever.
Yeah, and...
she didn't do that.
And just the decision to do that was something that I'm like, this show has at least something here. My issue is the same with you, though, because in the very next episode, what is this character known for? This character, despite the fact that she could be a strong character, is known for something that the show made up called Lucky Lechery.
Boobs.
And what this show...
The fan service in this show is pretty heavy.
Listen, I don't... If you want to do fan service, fine. It's your show, whatever. It's not for me, but, like, time it. Time it when it needs to be there. Because the issue I have with what happens in the next episode is they activate her stupid Lucky Lechery. And right after, maybe not right after that moment, but, like, long enough away where she is very much, like, indebted to this guy for saving her. And they decide to throw it in one more time. And I'm like, this is the absolute worst moment to do this sort of thing. Why? Why? You had such a good moment, and now we're in the middle of a fight, and, like, this is so good of a thing for you to do. But, like, why would you ruin this? Why can't you just let the sentimental moment hang there and let us enjoy that moment? Why ruin it by looting it up? That was the issue I have with this show.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten to that part, but I was definitely turned off a little bit by the fan service of the priestess in that one episode.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I'm getting eye roll.
It was, at least that priestess one wasn't as bad as what they do in this one. Like, so she's very, in that episode, you have her old sister from the church, like, basically berating her for her faith and berating her for acting so, like, pure and stuff. And so as a result, she starts stripping her with, like, fire and stuff. Not a great scene, not a great idea, but at least there is something behind, a little bit behind it. In this, they literally just throw her crotch into the guy's face and burn off her clothes because, quote, Lucky Lechery. That's what they do. And it's so degenerate for the timing of it that I'm like, this is the most... Like, you guys have been towing the line beforehand. Now you've really just ruined an episode because of the fact that you just couldn't stop yourselves. And I don't care if it's in the source material. The source material ruined their own their own issue with that, if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, there's nothing there. I haven't bonded with any characters. I don't like the protagonist. I think he's boring.
He's too, he is too one note, like you said, yeah.
He seems kind of old-fashioned in a way.
That's the thing. Like, we're in 2019 now with shows like Demon Slayer and shows like what My Hero Academia did, where we have these shonen things that show us that you can still do a shonen kind of fight anime without resorting to these very watered-down protagonists that just, like... It's not this character we care about. It's the plot he represents that we care about. It's, like, nothing he does is that interesting. It's what his, like, you know, he wants to, like, seek revenge against his mom and brother dying. He wants to, like, find out why infernos are being caused. Like, that's not really, like, something that, like, his personality seems to be doing. It's just, you know, that's what
it's
the plot
very
is.
Vague.
Like, anyone.
It's very vague and nebulous, which, like...
You could replace any character and put him into the same plot and nothing would change. Because it's the same... Like, everyone wants to find that out on this show. Everyone wants to know what the cause of infernos are and stuff.
Right. And, like, they don't play up the whole aspect of his parents dying. Like, to the point... I mean, of course it's a character-defining moment. But they don't play up enough about the aspect that it was somebody not him until he learns that at the beginning of the show. So it wasn't something he knew beforehand, so it's nothing that defined his character going into the show. So it just turns out to be this guy who was bullied and considered to be weird because of his smile and because he supposedly killed his family. And but like, I get the whole thing with the smile, like, as, oh, it's a gimmick.
It's and a gimmick, but one that I actually kind of relate to, because the idea is he smiles when he's nervous. And yes, and people see it as disingenuous, because like, he's smiling in moments that are like really inappropriate for like a laugh or smiles, and he's been having to deal with this, which is something I kind of understand, because I sometimes there's a serious moment that like feels really uncomfortable, and my immediate like defense mechanism is to make a joke or to make light of something or whatnot, because sometimes I just cannot handle a extremely deep serious moment that's affecting in person. So I get that. If that's going to be his gimmick, I don't mind it as much.
See, I do, because it makes it to, you've now taken that and made it his, like, such a core of his character design that it restricts your ability for him to emote with animation convincingly during emotional scenes. Because now it's just going to be like, oh, he's just going to smile.
Yeah, like, you're right.
Like, it's going to be one note. Like, you've deliberately hamstrung your animators for non-dialogue scenes where there's emotion. Like, everyone else is going to have, like, you know, like, a range of, like, progress. Like, the whole scene you just showed me with this girl, like, crying and, like, blah, blah, blah. And, like, there was a animation-wise. And, but there's never with this, with the protagonist. Like, it's just, like, either he's not smiling and, like, has this one blank, dumb expression on his face, or he's smiling.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it annoys me. It annoys me a lot, actually. I didn't realize how much it did until, like, a couple episodes in.
Yeah, and I guess, like, seeing Hibiki go, like, because it's, you will not see that with the, probably with the main protagonist, where she goes through, like, anguish, surprise, gratefulness, and almost a slight smile at the very end. In, like, the span of this entire, like, little scene here. And you will never see that probably with the protagonist. It's either giant smile because either he's happy or he's nervous. Good luck telling the difference. Or weird, dumb, determined-looking smile of where he's... Or not smile, but he's still showing teeth. But it's just, like, this straight face. That's it. You don't really have a whole lot of, like... I don't think I will see him look confused or something, so...
Yep, so I'm pretty out on Fire Force, and it happened really sudden.
So yeah, I get that, and I'm probably going to keep up with it just because it's there. It's not as bad as it probably other shows on this list are going to be sounding, but I am with you. It's I can feel that it will probably overstay its welcome, and it feels old-fashioned comparatively.
Cool, moving on.
All right, so I'm going to do our two Funimation ones right off the bat because... It's harder to do these because, you know, everything has to be its own streaming service these days, and everything is expensive, and I don't feel like subscribing. Well, some of us don't feel like subscribing or finding the shows, and it's just a pain in the butt. And so, anyway, how heavy are the dumbbells you lift? I have not caught up to the most recent episode, but that's not going to affect you at all because you haven't watched any of this. But I really enjoy the show. It's a very good comedy. It feels, some people have compared it to Cells at Work. Where you've got like kind of educational bits in the side, because they go into strength training and they talk about like the do's and don'ts of what you should do. And as someone who weightlifted with in college a little bit with people who did it for like football and stuff and actually got coached and was feeling like a lot of these things, I'm like, yeah, that's actually right. like you guys are actually talking, and they'll talk about like how skipping, like, the main arc of this is about a girl who has gained a little bit of weight and wants to try to lose it, and so she joins a gym, and in the gym is a bunch of muscle-bound freaks who are super intimidating, but convince her to start doing weight training to as a way to kind of lose weight, and she ends up falling in love with it. But during the show, she explains, there's an episode where she talks about to her friend, who is like so in love with the muscle-bound freaks that it's almost like she's having an orgasm on the screen. It's, like, that kind of uncomfortable, but it would be uncomfortable if it wasn't that our main protagonist girl, Sakura, isn't so, like, grounded that she points out all the weirdness and lets you, like, lets the audience know that, no, it's okay to feel awkward, because I, too, feel really awkward about this kind of a thing. But there's an episode where, like, they're talking about food, and she eats a lot. The main protagonist, Sakura, she eats a ton. And what she decided to do was she, for, like, one day, she said, like, oh, it's fine, I'm gonna skip breakfast, and I'll eat, like, lunch or something, and then eat this. And the girl who is in love with all the muscles, she's like, you shouldn't do that, because what that does to your body is it puts it into a survival mode. And it starts to think, like, I don't know when I'm going to get my next food. Time to start saving all the fat and all the stuff in my body in case we're going to starve ourselves or something. And you end up gaining weight because it's not getting rid of all this, like, extra energy and, like, fat, because it's storing it now. It's trying to, like, hold on to what it has. And she's like, what you need to do is make sure you eat in decent portions continuously, so that way your body jump starts the digestion and it starts to actually, like, burn and use the stuff, because it's not afraid it's never going to eat again. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right. You're not supposed to skip a meal, because it's just going to, one, then the other thing she said was, and this is the one everyone knows, you end up overcompensating in lunch and dinner because you're so hungry. But yeah, it's really good. I'm surprised at how much I enjoy a show that is actually kind of built mostly around education in a weird kind of a way, but it's super good. I recommend it. So the other Funimation one, Copcraft. So this one started out really good for me, and I just watched episode 10, and now it's a little bit less good for me.
That's a long way to get into sour on a show.
Yeah. So the first good half of the show is fantastic. It feels like a 1970s buddy cop show. The intro is really, really good and solid. The two characters, it's a, like, disgruntled vet guy who's seen it all, and this one chick who's like an alien. Because the whole premise of this show is that in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, a gateway opens up that leads to another world, and that has, like, fairies and elves and all these things.
But that's Pacific Rim.
I know, right? And so they have, like, a new kind of, like, island nearby it that is sort of like the Ellis Island for these aliens coming into Earth. And so that's where the show takes place. You are following police department, as they, and it's always in the announce, the intro about, like, under protecting the citizens from these those who would try to extort the aliens, and with, like, new weapons, because everything's got magic over there, or prostitution, because everyone wants a fucking elf, like, all this stuff. So, and it does not shy away from those themes. Like, there's an entire arc about prostitution that it goes into. The problem is that, one, fire that director. I don't know who it is. I don't care what the budget constraints are. There is no excuse for making your arcs split like this, where they decide to have, I've heard the studio's small. I don't care. This is dumb. This is so dumb. By episode 7 or 8, they all of a sudden were in the middle of this prostitution ring with a mayor candidate scandal thing going on, and they decide to instead, for the next episode, not even acknowledge that that's happening, and go with this arc where the chick, the elf girl, she ends up switching bodies with a cat. And it's very funny, haha, and it's actually a decent episode on its own. But I
sounds like filler.
But it's so maddening they put it in between these arc. And it's just sort of like, wait, what just happened? Because her friend Zoe just died, and that was an extremely emotional scene. We're not even going to talk about that? Nothing. And then
it sounds like a pre-written filler episode.
Yeah, but to do it in the middle like that, because the next episode, oh no, sorry, the next episode, it's 9.5, and it's a recap episode. They put a goddamn recap episode in, and after 9 episodes, and then episode 10 is finally the continuation of the arc. And at this point, one, don't really remember what happened in this arc now, because other than the emotional, like, sting at the end. But two, holy crap, did they need another recap episode? Because the animation quality just died. It just, this is worse than Shield Hero. Like, I cannot, I am so sensitive to seeing now, like, still shots of just, like, pan
art. Oh, yeah, where it's just, like, one.
Yeah.
Like, where it's the camera slowly panning across the screen with a still shot. Right. It's like, hey, look who had to save money in the budget.
But they did it, like, almost one right after the other. It was almost like someone taking pictures. That's how it felt. And if that was the gimmick, they could have gotten away with it if they had a character that was a photographer or something in there. That would have been fine. But they didn't try to lean into it at all. They just had it as if no one would notice. And at least in Carol and Tuesday, there was a scene where I almost thought they were about to do it in a restaurant. They had at least animated the people eating. At least, like, they were obviously enjoying food in the background. Very minimal kind of work, but it was enough to make it feel like at least there's a living person in this scene. But this was a fight scene, Ian. This was a fight scene that they just had, like, 9 still shots flash back and forth during this fight. And then they had the most janky arm movements I've ever seen. God, the voices aren't even synced to the mouth. And I'm not saying that the mouths are in anime, like, 100%, like, good. Like, this was so far off that you could, like, they had stopped moving. This was, like, classic anime as if it was being dubbed bad kind of, like, syncing job. Oh my god, Ian. I don't know what happened. I love this show. I thought this show was so good. And then this episode happened. And what's terrible is if this episode had just basic animation, this would have been the best episode of the show, because the plot is still good. The show is still, like, a good, whatever material it's grabbing on, the characters are, like, I have never seen a show take what, like, in anime at least, because I've always seen the reverse, where it's good animation, and the plot and the characters are shit, and people will still watch it because it's candy. This is so weird to see the reverse, where the characters in the plot have put the entire show on their back, and they are, like, knees buckling because the animation and the sound department is so goddamn awful right now. Like, it's so weird to see the reverse right now, but yeah, man.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it's just, it feels like this unlike My Sister, My Writer, which was kind of a joke to begin with, this generally feels like a tragedy, because this is such a good concept of, like, one, there's so many stupid isekais out there, it's cool to see a reverse one here and there. But two, the way that they did it, of this, like fish out of water and veteran cop kind of characters, like, it's nice to have. It just feels a little bit more of a breath of fresh air that if it was in a more competent or more well-funded studio, this would have been a, like, if it was Troika with Reed creators, this would have been one of the best anime of the season. But as of right now, it's unfortunately going to be talked about as one of the worst because of how bad the animation just, like, crumbled. It was kind of progressing a little badly here and there, but you forgave it because you were enjoying the ride. And then this one, it was just night and day bad, like how much it just, like, just dropped. And this is with a filler episode and a recap to give them more time, and they still couldn't get
this. What studio does this?
Oh, that is a great question. Let me look this up real quick. Copcraft Studio. Oh man, Millepensi. Never heard of them.
Never heard of them.
Let's see. We know them from. They've done Berserk is not a great use of the example.
Wait, Berserk 2016?
2016!
What? There it is.
That's, yeah, the rest I've never heard of the other shows. There's Techie U.
Oh my god.
Yusakame. Wake Up Girls, New Chapter, yeah. It's the same director, shit, too. Shin Itagaki.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's all you needed to know.
Yeah, honestly, it's amazing knowing that it was as good as it had been up until this point. Like, it's amazing that the show, like, it was fooling me so well. Wow. Yeah, so, man, that's just a shame. Man, this studio just cannot cut a break, get a break cut for it. Yeah, so that's Copcraft, man.
I guess I'll skip that one.
Yeah, I mean, I would still say, like, the first couple of episodes are so good that, like, it would still, like, but knowing that episode 10 is coming is just so, like, it's just so sad. But anyway, let's pick it back up again with Vinland Saga.
Ooh, yes, this is right back into good animation.
Holy territory. Crap, yeah. So you turned me on to this one as well. You started this It was like a week of like, hey, I'm watching Fire Force. I'm watching Vinland Saga. What do you think about these? And I was like, well, I guess I'll look at them. So what's your first initial reaction of the person who, of the two of us, once again, started?
Right. So Vinland Saga is based on a historical manga, long-running series about Vikings in the just after the turn of the first millennium AD.
The 11th century.
Around the time, right around Leif Erikson time, where he discovers America.
Leif Erikson is in the show!
Yeah, he's in the show. And at this point, they call America Vinland. Yep. So the story revolves around a young boy whose father is a very famous Viking warrior who is... Spoilers.
Obviously, we're going to have to spoil this because it happens relatively soon.
It's so central. It's super central to the show. Yep. His father is killed and right in front of the boy, and this boy vows revenge against the Viking who killed him. He ends up actually joining that Viking's crew and becoming essentially a mercenary pirate kind of Viking with him, raider, and he keeps trying to duel the lead Viking in order to hopefully one day exact his revenge and kill him as vengeance for his dead father.
Right.
The show is really good. It's a slow burn, but the action is beautifully animated. I think that it subverts, I'd say, a fair amount of... It's not anime in the traditional sense, I think, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
It sort of commits to this long-form storytelling with very little dialogue on the part of the main character. And it's kind of... I think the best way to describe it is it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
It's because it's very sad, and I'd say the main character, when he's a boy,
it's weird because, like, if we go with the, like, not to nitpick, but if we go with the, like, traditional sense of, like, tragedies, like, the tragic part has kind of already happened, so I do feel like it's going to be going on an uptick, but, like,
theoretically, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. it could also just be like, hey, you know, nothing good happens in this world right now. It could go down that route, and it's just like, I just expect more suffering before the end.
Yeah, and I would say the main character, they don't, like, an anime has a tendency to, like, over-explain things and over-dialogue, and the main character in this show doesn't talk a lot. He's essentially, it goes from him being a child at the beginning of
a snot-nosed punk.
Yeah, like a very unlikable child. Well, unlikable in the sense that he's a typical kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he tags along with his father as a stowaway on his mission to go fight in a war that the Vikings are fighting against at that point. I think it was the French, but now it's the English?
Yeah, I don't know. Something like that.
But, so, like, his father got essentially conscripted after... His father was a famous Viking warrior who one day just lost the taste for battle and just decided that he didn't want to kill anymore, that he was just done with that life, and he commits himself to being a good father and good husband and a useful part of this village that he sort of hides out in.
Yep.
But then, like, he goes back to war, and an assassin, like, a hit is put out on him, and he's killed. But basically, the whole thing is he's killed because his stupid fucking son stowed away and became a hostage.
Yes.
Like, he probably would not have died if that had not happened.
Yeah, the moment it came, the kid was just, like a vet, like, immediately announced that that was his father. And was like, oh, I feel a target for a hostage situation just coming along now. Like, way to go, kid. You just gave them more material they could ever hope for to get this guy to cooperate with them.
Right. But like a child, like, he swears revenge, and like he's got this single-minded vengeance, but it's very obvious. It's never said, but it's pretty obviously, and no other character has said it either, which I'm happy for.
Yeah.
Is that it's very obvious that he is seeking revenge in this, like, over-the-top way to hide the fact that he blames himself for his father's death.
Yep.
Like, he knows it's his fault, but rather than, like, face that fact that he got his father, this legendary Viking, killed, he decides to pursue vengeance as a means of sort of quelling that voice and to hopefully put things right. And that he also has not gone back to his family after his father died, which I think is also indicative of his shame that he can't face his family. So he hasn't seen his family in years.
And neither have we, the audience.
Right, which is, like, we're kind of tied to this character. And, like, at first I thought, like, that maybe he would learn the lesson that his father was trying to teach him, that, like, there are no winners in war and that violence is never the answer.
And no one's your enemy, really. Yeah.
Right, you have no enemy. And, like, but he's not learned it yet, and I think it's going to be a slow burn, which I kind of like, because I have all these expectations because anime, and I'm having to break those down, and it's really good. It's Studio Wit, like, they're really knocking it out of the park, in my opinion. I've been talking a lot.
So I'm just going to do some quick notes. I really enjoyed the difference in reaction to grief between the son and Torkoal's daughter. And so when Torkoal gets killed, his son is just blaring rage, and everyone's commenting on, like, how this kid is just, like, staring daggers, and, like, they've never seen such malice in a kid this young before toward the guy. Which, side note, I'm curious to see if the kid puts two and two together, that it's not this guy he should be hating, but the one who hired them. Because that's the real traitor in this whole thing, because Torkoal gets conscripted by a friend, said that the king will forgive him for leaving during that last battle if he comes in to help out with this grand war. And instead, he decides to take it upon himself to not tell the king, but to hire mercenaries to kill the guy. And I'm wondering when the kid's going to find out that he shouldn't be angry at the sword or the arrow that killed a man, but the person who drew or struck him. I'm wondering if the kid will find out in time. But then, so his grief is like this burning anger. Whereas his older sister, she completely just is like, well, I guess I got to go feed the sheep, and I've got to go cut them, and we're going to have to do this tonight. And so she starts throwing herself into the work. And it's like one thing after another where she's just trying to pick up the slack. And then at the end, the mom comes and she's just like, you need to stop. And she's just like, no, I got to shear the sheep. And then she's like, no, you need to stop. And all of a sudden, like, the sister finally just, like, breaks down and cries because of, like, she's been trying to avoid this, like, this grief and everything. And I just thought it was so cool that they juxtaposed the two together because of how different they were. With Vinland, it's so cool to see. This is another one where, like, it's an era and it's another thing where I don't think anime does this that often. I don't see Vikings that often, at least not in the sense where we go.
There's not a huge amount of, like, historical anime.
Yeah.
And especially not for this time period.
Yeah, and I think that the two together, like, if there is a Viking, it's sort of like that's a trope, or that's this guy's, like, stereotype. It's not really like we're all Vikings. And so to have the history and to be in this day and age is kind of cool. It's really well done, and I just love the pacing. Like you said, like, the characters, it's the most slow burn you could see with, like, the son and how he is trying to... He keeps challenging this guy, and he wants to do. And the reason he challenges him and doesn't just outright kill him is because he wants to prove that he could beat him through honor, like his dad was trying to do. Whereas the guy would have tried to win through, and did win through, like, deceit and, like, hostage and, like, tricks and stuff. So it's cool to see him kind of keep getting closer, but never really being able to 100% get there.
Yep. So I give it a highly recommend.
Yeah, this is another one of those shows where, like, I watched the first, I think it was the first episode, honestly, and I was like, all right, there's something special in this show. I get it. this is good. This is really good. There's nothing wasted. It feels like my time's not wasted. The animation's not wasted. Dialogue's not wasted. Everything feels like it's, like, really tight knit for this. So yeah, full marks so far. All right.
Yep. It's definitely a standout of the season.
Let's talk about... So Cattle and Tuesday is Netflix's, I think, powerhouse for this year. Vinland Saga would be Amazon's. Would you say that Dr. Stone would be Crunchyroll's?
I'd say probably yes. They certainly marketed it to...
Yes, because it even says like Crunchyroll Original, which I don't get to see that often in shows.
Yeah, yeah. So Dr. Stone, like big shonen, highly anticipated. Do you want to talk about briefly like what it's about?
Yeah, so it's about mysteriously the entire world gets petrified and turned to stone, and so about 1,500 years or something goes by with everyone frozen in these stone things, and sometimes perfectly preserved, sometimes smashed to dust. Tragedy. But at a certain point, one of the guys ends up waking up and starts trying to figure out what happened, two, how to sort of survive in this now, like the entire world has now been reclaimed by nature. And so his main goal is to try to bring civilization back to where it was once before. And he is like this science prodigy kid who like is just like obsessed with all this like science stuff and whatnot. Senku, that's his name, Senku. And so he figures out
Senku.
Thank you.
Senku is the fox girl.
Yeah, I still think about that. Senku. So he ends up figuring out like how to, you know, make basic like pottery, helm. Eventually starts figuring out like electricity. He starts figuring out like the biggest one was like soap for him. He said like so much that you could use with soap. And in the same process, he's trying to figure out, like, he gets the anti-petrification, like, kind of solution, and tries to build up a civilization based on science. So, yeah, take 2 million years of
it's
science.
It's a love letter to science. It's a love letter to science, which I think is super cool.
It's a love letter to science, and I think, like, in a weird sort of way, like, survival camping. Like, it's because it does a little bit of both, but, like, survival camping on steroids, and of course like massive amount of appeal to science.
Yeah, and like most of the stuff seems anyway to be rooted in actual scientific procedure. Yep. And it's, you know, it's supposed to be pretty accurate and true to life, which is really neat because a lot of shows don't deal in like logic and grounded logic that well. So it's really entertaining, and I think that part of it is just because this main character is pretty compelling, and not just because he's smart, because it would be very easy to write this guy as like a cynical like Greg House type,
yeah,
or Sherlock Holmes type, but he doesn't is never characterized as emotionless, and he's never characterized as thinking that friendships are useless,
right?
Because like that's how, like, it's so overdone at this point. The genius, the tortured genius who, like, only has people that he associates with but not real friends.
Yeah.
And Senku does. He has friends, and he values them. And he doesn't, like, he doesn't dwell on the fact that he values them, but he doesn't hide it either. He considers, like, the other people in his life to be his friends. And he puts praise on people that he admires and, like, the people he encounters, which I think is pretty bad when that's refreshing.
Yeah.
That's something I like about his character.
It's interesting how accurate a lot of these things are, so much so that at the end of episodes, they have to say, don't try this at home. And, like, like, hey, some of this stuff that is actually done here might actually be illegal where you live, so don't do this. But, yeah, it's cool. I think I got the year wrong. I think it's actually I thought they were in the year 3000, something like 3500. I think it's actually that 3,500 something years have gone by.
Have passed by.
I think, and they're in
there's
like
essentially nothing. Like, there's almost no remnants.
Yeah, there's like a couple
worlds from before.
There's like a couple statues here and there from things, but everything is almost completely like gone or overtaken or destroyed or something. I mean, we've only seen like a small section of this world too, so we've only seen like the Japan area. But right, if that's any indication of the rest of the world, it's probably all going to be similar. I like Senko. It's not like, even in Carol and Tuesday, they had a character who is like the cold science type, and you know, like she's the one character is like, you know, you're just like an AI or something. He's just like, yeah, I get that a lot, and it's just like, yeah, so does everyone that's smart in anime apparently.
Yeah, it's kind of overdone at this point. Yep. The fine thing with that character is that he's never meant to be like some...
He's not a big part of the show, yeah.
Right, he's not the focal point, so he can afford to be a little cliched. Yep.
Whereas Senko is very clearly excited to do this stuff. Like, he's always had a passion for this. And that's the difference. It's a passion. It's not like a matter of course for him. It's, this is something I absolutely love. And I am now in a chance to, like, do everything that everyone else had to do beforehand, but for the first time for a lot of people around here. And it's just so cool to see, like, the excitement and enthusiasm bubble up from him, and he's just so pumped. And, like, even to the point where he's at the new civilization with the girl who, I swear, every time I see it, I'm like, is this Chrono Trigger? Is this Chrono Trigger? She's from Chrono Trigger! No, she's not. But, like, that's the... Like, she's mentioned multiple times to him, like, you've got a really scary face, Kohaku, I think her name is. And it's just sort of like, yeah, I mean, that's what Senko is like, though. You kind of, and even she's, like, they've only met for, like, a couple of weeks now, but even she is just sort of, like, basically, like, standing up to him or to other people, and it's like, no, don't worry, that's just him. he doesn't actually, yeah. And that's the other thing. This show, like, unlike some people, like, online, a lot of people said, like, it wasn't very good in the beginning. I enjoyed the beginning stuff. The whole, like, unknown mystery and, like, like figuring out the weapons of science and, like, what to do. That was still really appealing to me. But, like, I will also admit that the show just took off when Kohaku and the Village came into being as, like, another arc. Like, all of a sudden, it really started to get, like, it felt like it was really moving and humming a little bit more when... It's like this: these native people that I think the theory Senku has is that
they're like second or third generation,
yeah,
or further along from people who were awoken.
Yeah, which makes me think like there are other people that. Well, so Senku is not the first one to wake up. Then
no.
So that's the interesting part. I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's yeah. I don't really have anything bad to say about it. I'm trying to think if there is anything that I can think of that I don't like. I would say it doesn't rise to the heights of some of the other shows this year. Like, you know, some of the highs, like in Demon Slayer or in Mob Psycho 100 or in Carolyn Tuesday or Vinland Saga, like some of the highs in those show are higher, but I'd say that it's comforting. It's kind of weird to say, like, it's a comfort. I love science. Like, I have a huge hard on for science. I like to watch scientific documentaries. When I was a kid, I watched Nova, that show on PBS a lot. And so this kind of scratches that itch where it's two things I really love, which is anime and science mixed together in kind of a wholesome package where they're with a, it's, and this is going to be kind of a weird cross thing too. It reminds me a little bit of early Star Trek in that it puts science on a pedestal and says that we're all working together to form a more, like a more wonderful existence for all of us. And like, we're all can work together and put aside our differences in the interests of exploration and discovery and scientific achievement. Like I think Gene Roddenberry would have loved this show.
I agree. Yep. I think that like what, so yeah, I it's hard to say that this rises up compared to, the ones you mentioned, which I think are going to be like, if we do that obnoxious Crunchyroll six are nominated things, then I think four of those are probably going to be Mob Psycho 101 or 100, whatever. 102 is what it has a two at the end. Vinland Saga. I hope Vinland Saga. Carolyn Tuesday and Demon Slayer. And then this one is going to be probably right up there as well. But here, so like, I don't think it hits, like, it's a weird show because I think that the other shows, because of how much they're able to break out of anime tropes, or at least the expectations of an anime, that's the reason why I think I like them so much. This one, what I like about it is that it has a tone and it sticks with it. So you'll have goofy moments, but that's what this show is kind of about, with like, it has these like, what is the muscle bound guy,
you're the JoJo character.
Yeah, the JoJo. Taiju. Or
Taiju, you mean his friend.
Yeah,
Taiju.
Yeah.
I thought you meant the bag.
No. The other muscle belt, yeah. And, like, you've got these really good, like, messing with each other moments, but it never feels like it's out of place. And that's, I think, the biggest difference with a lot of other shows, where, like, we were just talking about with the show Fire Force, where you have these moments that probably shouldn't, like, you, like, hey, man, this isn't that kind of a moment. Get this out of here. And this show is very much, like, all the way through, it never feels like they ruined their own tone or their own style or whatever to force some joke into it. Like, the whole show feels like at any moment you could have a joke and it would be appropriate. And I think that's a very important distinction to kind of make.
Yep. Well, I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too. Ian, I accidentally skipped one, but if it's for my daughter, I'd even defeat a demon lord. I've only watched a little bit of the show.
Man.
How much have you watched?
I've watched every episode.
Oh,
so
thank
far.
God. Okay, I think I've watched three episodes, and maybe the fourth, somewhere in that.
I don't know why I watched every episode.
So from what I've experienced, I saw this show and I was like, okay. That sounds wholesome. I was in a wholesome mood. Fruits Basket was taking too long to come out, and I was like, what else could I watch? And so, I thought this show was going to go in a different path, and you can tell me whether or not I was right or wrong, but, like, from what I've seen, nothing has happened, and it's just him taking care of this demon girl who he finds in a woods. Oh, I should say the premise of the show. It's an adventurer named Dale who finds a small abandoned devil girl on his adventure in this forest, and he kind of saves her and essentially adopts her as his own child. And she is the most cute as a button of all cute buttons that you could ever find. For someone who is a demon girl, she is so pure. that's basically the show. Roll credits.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty much just that. Like, each episode is just him looking after his daughter and to some sort of larger story as to why she was exiled from her village, but she doesn't know or doesn't remember. And it's kind of like hanging around in the background a little bit, but the main focus of the show is the interaction between the two. This show is... All right, so...
I wrote, cures cancer, soul food, warms the heart, and then clogs its arteries with the slow cholesterol of little plot.
Yeah, so there isn't much plot. It pretty much just... It's kind of the girl, the devil girl doing... Her name is... what the fuck is her name? Fuck. Starts with an N, I think.
Natsuki. No.
No. Shit. Why am I forgetting? He says it all the fucking time. Anyway. Anyway, so...
Latina.
Latina. I don't know why I said N. Latina. Yeah. So, Latina is adorable, and, like, she's, you know, just continuing to be adorable. It's pretty much just like, hey, Latina goes on this adventure today. Latina does this.
Oh, man,
Latina,
there's an episode that with her and puppies.
Yeah. Or her and cats. It's like, oh, yeah. She wants to, like, she really wants to see kitties. And so she goes to this guy's house where he has kitties. And, like, it's very light on the plot. So my thought was, okay, like, this is, like, the animation is very, 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 like, serviceable at best. Yep.
Honestly, I wish Copcraft could be at least this. That's the kind of animation. This is good. It's not bad. And it's consistent. Okay?
The world is kind of run-of-the-mill fantasy. There's nothing in it that so far has gotten my attention.
It looks too, like, clean.
The lore is sparse. It's there, but it's, like, very, like... There's something about these demon lords, like, seven demon lords and stuff. And, like... But it's... And, like, it kind of gets introduced naturally through the show because Latina is the fish out of water, so she learns things that Dale explains. And Dale is, like, this, like, really great adventurer, blah, 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 isekai, whatever. It's not an isekai, but he still is, like, the overpowered protagonist. And, like, it's heavily implied that Latina has, like, softened his heart from being just this, like, kind of cold badass, and now he's just, like, this, like, doting father. So it's really this, it's kind of potato chips.
Yes,
the show is Ruffles potato chips. Mm. There's not a lot there, but it's nice to the older I get, and especially the closer I am to like having a family of my own, the more I feel drawn to these like father kid stories, because there's something. There's something
does
that
this, does this
sort of captures.
Huh? Does this show flip a switch for you when you go like, "Hey, Susan,
you want to be a dad.
Susan, we need to work on something tonight."
It does kind of make me want to be a dad because it's like, oh, like having a kid could be cute, and of course, like a real child is going to just like hoo and scream and everything. Latina is this like perfect.
I can see kid, you holding but, your baby and being like, "Why aren't you like Latina?"
So, I cannot emphasize enough that this show is a trap.
Yes.
And like it, Mother's Basement touched on this.
Oh, I never actually watched that one.
Yeah. So they touched on it, and I did a little research for myself. This show is based on a series of light novels of the same name.
Okay.
And they haven't. If you're paying enough attention to the show, the hints are there.
Uh-oh. He's not going to have sex with this girl, is he?
So, Latina apparently never considers Dale as a... never views him as a father.
That's not good.
Apparently, as she gets older, she develops feelings for Dale.
What is it, Sin City? And
it's heavily implied, based on like a cover of an upcoming light novel,
that
they get married.
No!
Yeah. Yeah.
God! God damn it!
Mother's Basement had a very similar reaction. They're supposed to be like, why? Why? Why?
Is this because your population is declining, Japan? Is this why? No! There are better tactics. Yeah. Stop handing out condoms to kids at school. That's the tactic. Stop doing this!
And there are hints in the show where he like goes home to visit his family and brings Latina along, and then like... there's going to be a wedding.
No.
Like, blah, blah, blah. And Latina gets kind of nervous.
No.
You could tell she's nervous. And she's like, who's getting married? And she gets scared. And then she finds out that Dale's brother's getting married. And she's relieved.
No.
And you're like, oh, fuck me.
Yeah, literally.
So it's like, but the thing is, it's a pretty slow burn as far
that doesn't,
as like.
That does not make it less weird. That means that, okay.
So, like, hopefully, my hope is that the show will just be canceled and not see seasons in the future, and we'll never get to that point.
Oh, man. Well, man, I'm glad I haven't watched more to try to trick me.
So, like, my recommendation would be if you're, like, having a slow Sunday and, like, you're looking for some, like, wholesome father-daughter shenanigans, it's totally fine. Like, it is totally wholesome now.
Yeah,
but one day it won't be. So
it just you know what, it almost like I understand that it's probably a slow burn, but it just sounds like this artist, this guy or whatever the source, I don't know if it's a manga or if it's a light, I guess it's a light novel because this title,
it's a light novel,
so this guy's like writing this so long and it's just like, you know what, why don't they just fuck, I'm tired of writing about this angle, why don't I just have them fuck, wouldn't that be great, that's something different, alright, I'm gonna start steering us toward this angle.
Yeah, but oddly enough, it doesn't make me angry in the same way that the next show on our list does.
Yeah, okay, so is it wrong to pick up Girls in a Dungeon?
Yep, Danmachi too.
All right, have you watched both the seasons?
Yeah, I am I am up to date except for this week's episode.
Okay, so did you ever watch the spinoff? There was a spinoff one with that involves the girl he likes. The
which one?
No. The one he likes.
The one he likes.
The blonde chick. So
what's her face? Yeah, I never saw this.
Okay, I want to say to start off, this world is something I actually kind of enjoy because it's all about gods being down on the mortal realm. One, it's not an isekai. Thank God. But it's on the gods in the mortal realm, and they have, like, factions and clans that they bestow their powers to, humans and mortals and stuff. And I think that the premise for this world is actually not bad, then that's the kind of reason why I kind of keep coming back to it. And the proof of that is the fact that the spinoff show is actually pretty decent. It's actually not bad. Because it's not so, it doesn't fall into the same problems that what we're about to talk about falls into. And so, like, this could be a good show, if Belle wasn't in here. So, is it wrong to pick up girls in a dungeon? It's all about this character named Belle, and he's part of Hestia's he follows her house. And it's about...
He's in her familia.
Familia, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And it's all about going down into a dungeon because this town is a circle and has a giant tower like every fucking anime and fantasy ever does. I don't know. I gotta find out. I have to know. Is that something in Japan lore or, like, European lore or somewhere where there is something known as this? Is this a Tower of Babel sort of thing? Or something else? Because I gotta know why this is used so much, this tower in a circle village or city. Because it's everywhere, it seems like. And I just don't know if I get the reference 100%. But...
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, they go down to this dungeon to level up and bring riches and glory back to their god or goddess. And it's not just one faction of gods. So Hestia is a Greek god, but there's also ones from Mesopotamia like Ishtar. There's Freya, who is from Norse. There is, I think there's one other, and I can't remember it. But it's just a bunch of collection of gods and goddesses from all over the place. And so yeah, that's basically the premise of the show. The main hook is in the first season, this guy, Belle, sees this one girl, this sword master chick, and she's, like, super beautiful to him, and, like, a lethal, like, sword fighter and stuff. And he just falls head over heels in love with her and proceeds to stalk the shit out of her for the rest of the season. And that's basically the show! Roll credits!
Yeah, let's not beat around the bush. This show is trash.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it's absolute, just high-grade trash.
The light novels are, from what I've heard, because one of the guys in Canada, he loves this show, and he has all the light novels, and loves them as well. From what I hear, the light novels are no different. It's exactly the same trash.
Yeah, it's a harem. It's a harem show.
It is a mega power fantasy show, because this should not be called Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon? Probably should be Is It Wrong to Pick Up Belle in a Dungeon? Because every bitch is in heat around him. Everyone. Except for the girl he likes. It's the only one who does not seem to show him the same level of, like, I've lost my panties. What are we gonna do about it, Belle? What are we gonna do?
Like, I have not seen such shamelessness in a mainstream anime, like, maybe ever.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing is, like, it was pretty harem-y in season one, yep, but boy, has it gotten way worse in season two. And then, like, the entire plot line in season two, the main arc, is centered around
the pleasure
brothels. Yep. And prostitutes.
And it's a war between Ishtar and Freya, who are both goddesses of pleasure, sex, and fertility. Although Freya also gets to have dominion over war and bloodshed and honor, so she's got one little one-upness on Ishtar. But, like, literally, same sort of an idea of, like, hey guys, let's have sex. Why? Because sex.
Yeah, and, like, he... Oh my... It's pretty fucking shameless. And there is literally a point in the show where the main character, Belle, is strung up in a dungeon.
Oh my god, yeah.
And this, like, this freaking
frog lady,
monstrous, yeah, essentially toad as a woman, literally grabs his dick,
yeah,
notices he doesn't have a boner, and goes to get something to fix that.
Yeah.
I shit you not, that is a thing that happens in this show. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck?
Ishtar essentially does the same thing. The amount of times that the camera has panned off almost not quick enough for a show that's not rated mature, the amount of times Ishtar just drops all of her robes and is just like, so we doing this? Is, like, too many to count at this point in this season.
It's pretty bad. Like, it's pretty shameless. And
if you like that stuff, it's right up your alley. But don't try to have a serious conversation with me about this.
Trash.
Yeah.
Like, season one, I pretty much enjoyed season one, even though it was still, like, had harem elements in season one. It was more focused.
Yes. It never felt like
hero's journey.
It never felt like all the other girls were in love with Belle. It just felt like Hestia loved Belle, and then Belle was not in love with her, but was in love with this other girl. Instead, he had, like, a bunch of girls he interacted with, but they were all, like, companions and, like, proper party members. And here, the only girl that I think hasn't fallen, like, head over heels in love with him is Makoto, the samurai girl thing. Because now his, like, the girl who carries all of his shit for him is, like, in love with him now. Hestia has always been in love with him. Even the sword girl is, like, kind of falling for him because they have that wonderful, heartwarming dance scene in the beginning. All the gods, all the goddesses that of love, like these super prestigious girls, are just dropping panties for him at this point. Every girl in their thing is falling for him. Like, pleasure distance girls are just going out of their mind trying to find him, and now he's probably gonna have this fox girl wrapped around his finger too. It's
right, and like that's the thing. Like, this has now devolved into the plot line that I hate the most in the entire world, which is damsel in distress needs to be rescued by the hero.
But she doesn't want to. She doesn't want you to do it. She's not worthy.
She wants to nobly sacrifice herself because she is not worthy because she's a prostitute. Like, this is demeaning.
It's so bad. Like, it's so...
Like, this is the big time freaking demeaning. Like, it's borderline... I'm sure a lot of people would say it's not borderline. It's pretty sexist.
Yep.
Like, more so than harem anime usually is.
And you kind of start to tell that it's going in the sexist route because they stopped having male prostitutes around there, too. Like, it's just all females at this point. And, like, it's always a female who needs rescuing. It's never a male. And it's always a female with, like, zero confidence in herself and having, like... And it's not only that Belle needs to rescue her physically, but he needs to emotionally rescue her, too. Like, it's never...
She has no character... No defining character trait.
Nope. The only thing that made me like her in the beginning was that she shared a love for hero stories, and I thought that this would be kind of a cool... I honestly was... Like, the reason I hate Belle as a character, as a protagonist, is because he never says anything that's important. Like, nothing he says actually matters. And I kind of was like... Like, the obvious rebuttal to the fox girl in the very beginning said that, saying that, yeah, well, prostitutes are always the hero's downfall, which is technically true. If you read like things like Samson's thing in the Bible and whatnot, prostitutes,
right, it's a great legend.
Yeah, they yeah. tend to be the reason. Pure, but like, blah, blah. And she's like, well, like no one should come and rescue. Like, I'm not worth being rescued. And my immediate response in my head was like, that's because you're the one who needs rescuing the most. Like, that was all like I could think of. I was like, somebody say something along those lines. Like, make some point about how the person who has zero hope needs to be most obviously rescued. And they didn't do it. Instead, they kind of just leaned into the prostitution stuff and kind of beat us over the head with it. Like they really wanted to make sure we knew that she slept with a lot of men up to this point. Like, they really had to make sure they repeated that to us a lot of times to no end. I don't know what the purpose for a lot of that stuff was. And it's just...
because you need to know that she's a dirty fox ghost.
Fox ghost Senko, help us.
Yes, what can Senko-san do for you?
Oh, man. But yeah, and then they also kind of drived in like how helpless she was. Like, they really went too far to that side of like, you need, like, I mean, the most recent episode was like cathartic finally. And that's the other issue, is that like, when they finally get to that cathartic moment, I'm like, wow, you know, this could have all solved if you started with this episode. Like, if this episode or this point here, like, none of us would be in this issue, this situation right now, if somebody just fucking, like, stood up for 1 minute against and said, like, hey, maybe I don't want to do this. And, ugh, I don't know. I mean,
the thing is, like, he's annoying because his character, like, the same reason that any... isekai protagonist, even though this isn't an isekai, it might as well be. Because
yeah.
it's the same power fantasy thing. The reason that he is so powerful is because he has some sort of special trait where, because he has a crush on Sword Girl, it makes him level up faster.
Yeah. As long as he's...
That's his great
As power. Long as he pursues that goal, he's going to be leveled up. Which is hilarious that Hestia, like, gave him this because she's in love with this guy. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, like, yes, he's kind-hearted and stuff. Obliviousness and ignorance of character is usually the quickest way for me to dislike a character.
Yeah.
I cannot stand it when you have an ignorant main character.
And that's the thing,
ignorant to the fact that all these girls are, like, fawning over him. It's kind of like how Naruto was to Hinata.
Yeah.
in, and that it just I can't stand it. Can't stand it.
If we want to bring this back to like Demon Slayer, who and compare two kind-hearted protagonists, here's the difference with when in Demon Slayer, when Tanjiro is like showing compassion to someone, you don't see this as like, you, or rather, you see this as him because he understands what they're going through and knows, hey, this is a bad situation, and I'm really sorry about this whole thing, and I'm trying to find...
He has a broad capacity for empathy.
Right. Whereas Bell does not... When he sees, and he's trying to be kind to someone, it's not because he actually cares. I mean, sure, there's some point in there. But it's because this is what he has to do. It's more of a duty than an actual genuine compassion feel for it. And it just feels fake.
He wants
fake.
To be a hero.
Yeah, and he wants to, it just comes off across as fake. And I know, like, right. Like you would say, oh, well, you know, that doesn't make it, like, him less kind. I'm like, yeah, sure. By the end of the day, the same action will probably end up being happened. But when you look at Bell, it just feels so much more fake compared to what Tanjiro is kind of like. And that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, he's bland. He's a he's ignorant. Like the level of shamelessness is just really,
it's just like, and
I can't remember a show that was as shameless as this.
Man, yeah, me neither right now. I mean, like, okay, so I guess every other bad isekai, like really bad isekais, Ragnarok is pretty damn bad. I would, like, that's a show that is like this, but take bad animation and crank up the harem to like an 11, and then that's Ragnarok. And also isekai. So, here's the good stuff I can pull out from this type of show. One, it's not an isekai, because it didn't need to be. There's no reason to have another world sort of thing. It's, as you can see, people, it's perfectly fine to do a very video game fantasy-like show without needing to be another world. It's not hard, and there's no reason, there's nothing gimmicky that you'll need to be done about. The thing is, I do kind of dig the world. Like, I like the system of gods granting power, and I like the idea of gods kind of rivaling each other and
yeah,
butting
the
heads.
Level
the execution's just not great, but I enjoy the
it's a video game.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like
it's
the.
It's not natural.
Yes, that's exactly, yeah. So yeah, it's, that's really the only things I can grab from it. The combats are fine and whatever. The music's it's forgettable. But yeah, it's if you like big titted girls and fox girls and people jiggling around one awkward kid who doesn't seem to register anything around him, then this show's for you.
Probably need to be examined.
I do. But honestly, like, why don't? I'm sure there's some fantasy hentai out there. Why don't you just read or watch that instead?
Yep. Nope, I agree.
You'll probably get the same out of that. All right, so. So I was gonna use this as a my daughter as a segue one when you talked about like the world's not really explained well, but Lord Elmaloy's the second case files Rail Zeppelin Grace Note. Could you just have picked one of those as a title, like like any one of those Lord Elmaloy's case files, Rail Zeppelin or Grace Note would have served as a title, but they couldn't and they put one in parentheses too. So. This show is by Troika, and which did Recreators, did Bloom Into You, it did Al No Zero. It's got some pretty good shows underneath its belt, and it's most notable because it's not Ufotable, because this show is about Waver Velvet, who was one of the participants from Fate Zero in the Holy Grail War, and so this show is about him being all grown up, and now he's a teacher. With, for some reason, his arch nemesis's name as his new name or alias, and
it was like a lordship that he took over.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They do explain that because episode zero is utter trash, and don't watch it. But episode one, they explain it pretty quickly. If I do say so in terms of anime timelines, of hey, we need someone to fill in for this lordship. For the time being,
after you caused,
as you
death.
Kind of, although he didn't really, man, that was Saber's master, and he hunted that guy down to like the end, just ended everything about him. And the reason that they need somebody is because of the fact that the next in line, this daughter, she's not old enough to take it. She's not, she's not ready yet. So they need someone to kind of fill in and be a steward of this lordship thing. And that's what Waver is doing. The problem is, I don't know why they gave him the name Elmaloy. It's just, I don't know. It could have been Lord Waver Velvet, but whatever. The show is mostly a monster of the week, but not really monster. It's a mystery of the week. It's murders or crime or something happens, and Waver, being the more unorthodox mage, like he showed in Fate Zero, where he's just not strong, so he doesn't magic his way out of situations. He has to find the less magical ways to do things, or the weaker magic ways. He sees things a little bit different than other mages, so they call on him to investigate these paranormal situations. And yeah, that's basically the premise of the show.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not a show that you should watch late at night, as I discovered, because I've fallen asleep at least twice watching this show. Not that it's boring.
It requires a sense of concentration that you should not be tired for. And if you're pushing bedtime, this is not a show that's going to keep you up. This is a show that will be too much mental capacity for you to want to keep doing it late at night.
I have only watched a couple episodes, actually. I'm not up to date.
I think I'm two episodes away from up to date.
It's fine. Like, I'm kind of impressed by how they animated grown-up Waver.
Yes.
Because, like, his mannerisms carry over. Because at first, when I first saw the character design, I'm like, that looks nothing like Waver.
Yeah.
Like, nothing at all. But then, like, as you watch, I'm like, okay, I see the mannerisms coming through. I see certain elements in his character have been preserved. So I'm like, okay, credit where credit's due. Good job.
Yep.
But it is.
You actually see this character at the end of Ufotable's Fate's Day Night Unlimited Blade Works when Rin takes Shiro to the clock tower. They pass in the hallway, and Waver, as this Waver, asks Shiro some questions about the Holy Grail War and his involvement with Rin or something. And it's not long, but it's enough that you're like, is that Waver? Is that Waver? And then, like, it kind of leaves you with that. And in addition, Unlimited Blade Works also introduces, at that same episode, the blonde girl who's in this, the rich girl who does gems. Man, I can't remember her name. She owns, like, the store. I don't know. But Rin fights her at the end in Unlimited Blade Works.
Right, in the, like, hand-to-hand.
Yeah, thing. Yeah.
But, I mean, like, it's good. It's not like the other Fate shows, so it's...
Luvia. That's her name, Luvia.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a whole lot to say
about
it.
Yeah, so I have a little bit more, because I think I've watched a lot more episodes of it than you. Mine is that there are moments where I'm like, okay, you didn't need Saber. I like Gray as a character. I just wish there wasn't a connection to King Arthur. And they make a weird connection with her. And it's just sort of, it feels so forced. As if, like, they're scared that they don't have a Saber in the show that people aren't going to watch it. Which is kind of the story of Fate, the franchise in general at this point. Like, they just...
It's just Saber and everyone else.
Yeah, because they're scared that if Saber doesn't make an appearance in some way, shape, or form, that no one's going to watch this show. I find that there are times where I'm glad that Waver references Iskandar and Fate Zero, but there are other times where I wish that, like, it wasn't so focused in on something that already happened. Like, I kind of would like a new memories and new stories to be developed without feeling like we're dragging this dead weight behind us. So you haven't gotten to this part, but the actual arc, and the reason why Rail Zeppelin is in this, is there's a point in this show, and I kind of would love to see where this whole thing goes, because there's a point in the show about the mystical eyes, and there's a place, a market, that sells them back and forth to people. Like an illegal black market auction. And it's exactly how it says. It basically takes people's eyes and switches them. Through magic, of course. And this is interesting because not only does this connect in with this story, but now you're also drawing in Garden of Sinners, which is in the Fate universe as well. And because the main character in that show, Shiki, has these mystic eyes that can see points in magic and stuff. That if she cuts it, she will break something immediately, kind of a thing. Anyway, so in this one, they've gone crazy with mystical eyes, and everyone's got, like, a different... Like, you're all of a sudden in this environment where everyone's got something weird. Anyway, there is the moment in this rail car thing that feels very Murder on the Orient Express, but with magic. And this is the second problem I have with this show. At no point in the entire Fate franchise, at least in the anime, do they really explain their magic system. Like, they really don't let it... They kind of, like, introduce pieces as needed, but it's an extremely soft magic system that no one really talks about too much how it all works. Yes, we've got... Right,
the rules are not easily defined.
Right. We know that there are crests that are inherited from people, from the family, that they bestow upon one child. We know that the more that that happens, the stronger the crest becomes, so you can get better offspring. We know that the magic is split into various schools, necromancy, astronomy, astrology, gems, etc. What we don't know is, like, what all each magic can do. We don't know what is the limit. We know that there is a mana system, but we don't know exactly how it fills in people's bodies and how they replenish it, other than you can have sex with someone and then you can get mana linked with each other. That's the original Fate Stay Night visual novel. And so in this scenario for this train, you have a murder mystery which involves needing to have facts to know who done it, why, and how. All so you can know who and try to figure this out, but the problem is, like, with a vague soft magic system that is at the heart of what killed this person, you now have to define something that has not been defined yet. And that's where the show's problem starts to fall apart, because it starts pulling things out of its ass that it has to explain things as it's trying to explain how they use these things for this crime at the same time. And it is, like, you want to talk about recreators having a bad exposition problem in the first couple of episodes? Take those, like, three or two episodes that they did that and cram them into one episode and one, like, speech, and try to see if you can follow that. Because it is so bad how much they have to try to explain in order to introduce stuff that has never been talked about yet. And at the end of it, I was like, this could have been really good if your magic system was less complex. but no one knows what you're talking about. And yeah, it's so, like, because... Okay, so... Here's my example. There's a guy in there who has these mystic eyes that let him see the past of certain, like, places. And so what it shows is if he's seeing somebody, he can see almost their memories sometimes or things that have happened. It's really cool because he uses it as a way to hunt down rogue mages or murderers and stuff. And he can basically know who his guy is because he's going to reveal the past accurately. So at a certain point, somebody in this train gets killed, and he's a suspect because they say that his eyes let him hold a spell that will, in the past or whatever, and will cut this girl's head off or something. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, no one mentioned this. And it's like pulling... Yeah, and they say it with such conviction that I'm like, did you just pull this out? Because I thought the eyes just see things. At no point have I heard that a mystic eye can cut stuff or hold stuff besides that, or be used in conjunction with spells like this. But, like, also, how would I know? They don't explain them. They've never had to explain them. And now you have to, because you have a crime scene that needs the facts nailed down so we know how these all happened. And that's where the show starts to really, like, get shaky. And that's my biggest issue with this show. It's just that you cannot have...
No, and the whole show revolves around a character who's not, like, super strong with magic to begin with, but he's strong with magic theory.
Yes.
So it's like, how, if you're, but, like, how do you delve really heavily into the magic theory if you haven't really laid out clear and easy to understand rules to the magic system?
Yeah. There are times that it works because it doesn't need to be super, like, extravagant with the murders. So, like, a mage person's lab goes into hijinks, and you have to solve where his body parts are and stuff, and you have to figure out, like, what the whole like what went wrong in the incantation. You don't need to go too much into the magic. You kind of already figured out that he was doing something he probably wasn't supposed to, and you just need right. to kind of figure out the rest. That's fine, but when you get into something super specific of you're in a confined room, someone here is a murderer, who was able to do this, and you throw magic that has never been defined, extremely, like, or nailed down, suddenly you can't do this as easily. And it's so confusing and so hard to make this a detective show when you have such a vague magic system. So that's literally my only problem with this show. Literally everything else, they're not too... Unlike the first episode zero, they're not too like anime tropey with things. They don't try to be. This isn't Apocrypha with shoddy characters. Although they do have the necromancer from Apocrypha pop in there. But since Apocrypha and since Fate Zero or Fate's franchise's creator is psychotic, it's an alternate universe. Apocrypha never happened, so this guy never went through all those events, and it's a completely different like story with him. So they're able to use him, and it's interesting to kind of. Like, see him as a character without being in a shitty story. But, yeah, there's... I think the one thing this show has going for it... The animation is so good. It's so crisp and clean looking. Like, I cannot express how much, like, budget it looks like they just threw at the animation.
Fate.
Yeah, so that's Lord Almaloy's. I think it's fine. I just kind of think sometimes it tries too hard, and I think that the soft magic system needs to... We're at a point now where you can no longer avoid it. You need to start setting up rules for this magic system if you're going to start using it the way you're using it, so...
I agree. Yeah, sounds about right.
All
right,
so any crappy shows, Ian? Because I've only watched one and not that much.
No, I mean, we've pretty much talked about everything I've been watching, so...
Alright, so I watched Isekai Cheat Magician for the first episode. man. Okay, so... I didn't like the Wise Old Man's Grandchild.
I heard it was bad.
It was really bad. There are ardent defenders out there. I don't think we'll ever be friends. I'm sure there are ardent defenders for this, too. But this is, like, if that show... Wise Old Man's Grandchild was so generic. This show somehow topped that by being worse of a generic show. And I'm at the point now where I'm getting worried by the influx of bad isekais, because eventually we're going to have a season 2 of ReZero, and we're going to have a season 3 and a movie of Konosuba. And maybe one day, God willing, we have Grimgar season 2. And people are going to shit on those because they are isekai and not because they're good. And I'm worried that it's because these horrible isekai that are all coming out that they're going to... Oh, no, even worse. They're going to burn out the market, and I'm worried that they're never even going to get a second season of ReZero or a third season of Konosuba, because they're going to think that everyone's just tired of isekais. And it's just... like they're going to read the data wrong. It's like, no, we're tired of this shit you're putting out for us. We liked these, but you keep throwing trash at us thinking that we're going to eat it. It's Skittles... and we're getting sick in our stomach because we're eating too much and our tongue's bleeding from the color. So that's my... like, isekai, it's so... it doesn't even start out like... at least with Rise of the Shield Hero, there was like, oh, these mages have this tradition and they're bringing in these heroes to fight off the waves. It's not a great reason, but there was one there. Isekai, they just magic themselves in there randomly and nobody knows who they are. They don't know where they're at. Nobody knows why they're here. So why are they here? Like, what's the point of the story now? Like, if there's... if they're here, why aren't more people in the world being randomly magicked into this other world? That's the issue now. And it's just so... it's just a garbage show, and I couldn't even finish this thing. I was like, the one episode I watched, I'm just like, this is just so freaking bad. Oh, man. I did try to watch... I haven't finished it. It's less bad. But... the only reason I decided to watch it because I could not stop laughing at the title. But it's, Do You Love Your Mother and her two-hit multi-target combo. And yeah, it's not bad. It's just kind of, like, it's very obvious what they're doing. It's a MILF. It's a MILF isekai. That's it. It's a generic but with a different spin to it. So, yeah... I don't know. Skip them. The only way that they're going to stop making these kind of shows is if you people stop watching them. So.
Yep, pretty much. You gotta make use of your time.
So let's move on to music then. This is the last stuff. Ian, any favorite openings from this season?
Demon Slayer's opening was really, really good.
Yep. Same person who did Fate Zero's openings.
Yeah, it was very strong. Mob Psycho Season 2's opening was balls to the wall awesome.
Yeah, that one, so for the year, that one's in my lead right now. And you know what? Because I just finally finished Mob Psycho Season 2, and I first saw that opening, and I was like, this isn't as good as the first one, because there's something about, like, that, like, weird guitar, like, strumming going on in Mob's head, like, slowly falling backwards and all this, like, stuff flying around, that I was just like, damn, this is lit. And then this one comes out, and I was like, what the fuck is this shitty-looking, like, animation thing in the beginning here? And as I kept watching the show, I was like, fuck yeah, this is a good opening!
It's really good.
It just grew on me.
Fantastic. I'd say Demon Slayer, I'd say the first core of Shield Hero was pretty good.
That's right, yeah. Forgot about that one.
And then,
but anything from summer, anything from the summer season.
Definitely Carolyn Tuesday's opening. It makes me happy.
I first saw that and I first was like, okay, this isn't as good as I thought it was. And it was like Mob Psycho, all of a sudden I was like, okay, this isn't bad. I'm enjoying this. It was the animation won me over of like this classic scene of, like, you know, when shows start like this sometimes, but like everyone just starts dancing with them. And as they're walking along, they're kind of like dancing a little bit, and people are just sort of like all of a sudden like also doing a spin in the streets and also kind of like dancing until they get to their gig, and then everyone's dancing with them. It was all of a sudden like, this is warming my heart a little bit.
I'd say Vinland Saga's opening is also pretty
good. It's good until it gets to the screamo. And that's the part where I start being like, okay, guys, calm down. Like, is your father stopped crying yet?
in opposition, one of the openings and closings that I always, always, always get because I hate it is Danmachi Season 2's. I can't do it. Can't do it.
Anyway. Mine is How Heavy Are the Dumbbells You Lifts? Onigai Muscle. Oh man, Ian, this song is just so, like, I love this is something that, like, it's so goofy because the show itself is going to be goofy, and it's so, like, pumping at the same time, because, like, there's all these girls just, like, dancing around in their workout clothes and then doing workout exercises essentially, and they're all just, like, so excited about working out, and then Machio comes in, and he's just like, nice muscle, Saito chesto, nice bulk, and then they go, so pump, and they go, most muscle, and I was just like, oh man, this is the best thing ever, oh my God. And it's just like them saying, thank you muscle, the entire time. It's such a good opening. And then Dr. Stone's Good Morning World, Ohio, like, it's just, man, I didn't think I was gonna like it. It's one of those, like, I think most of my shows, when I watch the opening, it's rare that I like it the first time, I think. And then all of a sudden, second or third time, I go, man, I'm starting to dig this opening. And I think it's because now I've watched the anime, and I start to see that the opening connects with the anime a lot, like, more, so you see more of the elements kind of in the opening, and you start to appreciate the opening's, like, graphics a little bit, and I think that's the reason why I liked Good Morning World, because of how much of the show now I've seen, and I'm now seeing it in the opening that I'm like, yeah, this is everything, this is such a good opening for the show, it's so good. Alright, what about ending themes?
Again, I say Carolyn Tuesday's ending is really,
I like it. It's a little too simple because they're just walking, but I love the song Hold Me Now. And I love the little letters that pop up on the thing as they're, like, kind of, like, walking, and the words are all dancing up on the screen.
I don't know. Come back
to okay. me. Vinland Saga is the one I think would win it for me. Amorous Torches is so good. And there's, like, half English, half Japanese in there, so that way I can kind of follow along. And the graphics of them, like, sailing and, like, braving storms and stuff as they're kind of, like, trying to get to this Vinland place. It's so cool. And unlike Hold Me Now, which is a very upbeat song. Torches is very, like, mellow, dramatic. Well, just dramatic a little bit more. And it's very, like, serious of tone, which matches every single episode end. Like, it never feels like an episode ended, and I'm like, well, this song is a little inappropriate. There is an episode in Carolyn Tuesday where all of a sudden Hold Me Now comes after, and I go, ugh. Guys, not a good time. It was like a moment where, like, there was a downer at the end of an episode, and then this very uppity song comes, and I go, and I'm listening to it, it's like, oh, that felt weird. I'm confused. But I still love Hold Me Now. I'm not gonna hold it to that kind of just one moment. But yeah, Torches, Aimer's Torches for Vinland Saga is probably my favorite ending of this entire season so far.
It's been a good season, though. Like, yeah. I mean, it's strong.
This is like fall 2018 strong. Holy crap.
And we still got another season to go, yeah. And the My Hero...
Oh, that's right, yeah. My Hero Academia is coming out to steal all the awards again.
Yeah, it's just like, man, like, it's another strong year of anime.
Yep. All right. I don't have anything else, so let's, I guess, wrap this up. So, any last words, recommendations, or things going on that you want to give a shout out before we leave?
It's been a really good season. I'm excited for us at the end of the year to wrap it all up and see who we think are going to take away the Crunchyroll awards. And I think our lists will be probably fairly similar, but probably. I don't know. We'll see how we...
We'll probably include the same stuff, but in different orders is probably where we're going
to
be.
I think that's probably fair. I'm interested to see what... I haven't really looked at the roster for fall season to see what else is on the list other than My Hero Academia, because that's, of course, the big one. But, you know, I'm hoping that it finishes strong, you know, really, like, torches it through the line. Because Dr. Stone is going to have, like, a full 24 episode run, yep. So like that'll still be with us, and then we'll hopefully get the second 12 of Carolyn Tuesday,
which will also
be great.
So, Netflix, simulcast your shit.
Yeah, I know, right?
God damn it.
So like it's gonna be, and I think Vinland Saga is also
I think so too, yeah.
So it's gonna be a really good end of the year.
Those are my two strong ones right now. And I didn't think that going in because I really enjoyed Demon Slayer and I thought that was probably gonna be my anime of the year. And then I watched Vinland Saga and Carolyn Tuesday, and now I'm like, nope, it's these two right now. Just like, man, it's been a while since I've been obsessed with the show this much, like Bunny Girl Senpai. And speaking of. Oh, October 2nd! October 2nd is the movie! Oh, I'm so hyped. Do you want to just do an episode of just that movie afterwards?
We could do a special edition episode of the Bunny Girl Senpai movie.
Rascal Does Not Dream of Dreaming Girl, I believe, is the full title.
Yep. I'm excited. I'm seeing it at 7 o'clock.
Me too.
On October 2nd. So
I will be 1 hour ahead of you because I'm on East Coast.
You will be an hour ahead.
But yeah, got so, our tickets.
We could do a special edition episode afterwards.
Hype, yes. Yeah, okay, we'll do that. Look forward to that, people. And I think it's safe to say neither of us really watch anime movies that often. We don't really get a chance to.
Yeah, but my theater is pretty. When I bought the bunch of them that were. Like seats taken and stuff, so there's actually going to be a decent crowd at my theater.
Mine was less surprisingly sparse. So I was able. I don't think the East Coast enjoys anime as much as anywhere else.
Yeah, I guess Madison's full of hippy dippy anime lovers.
Maybe. But yeah, okay, we'll do that. One of these days, Weathering with You will come over here and we'll be able to see it, and maybe it'll be just as good as Your Name. But that's my other movie I really want to watch. Until then, we'll just deal with the rascal. I'm excited. So, all right then, let's finish this up then. So if anyone's got any questions, comments, rebuttals to our opinions, you can write them at leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.com. There's also a Twitter account. It's @theLOMGpodcast. There will be a Discord link in the description for this episode, and it will include a link for our OTN site. Discord, where you can talk with a bunch of gamers who enjoy esports or League of Legends or what have you, and maybe party up with folks. You can do whatever you want. There's also Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m., except for me right now this month. I have been taking a break from Twitch streaming Maybe I'll start back up in October, but I'm just trying to clear out things so I can make room for more focusy stuff that I want to do. So Twitch streams was one of those things that I'm taking a break for. Also, every Monday night at 8, there's a Level Up live podcast done where on Twitch where you can comment to the hosts and stuff with John and Joey. So you can look forward to that as well. But that's all I've got. Ian, thank you again for coming out and doing another anime episode. This was really fun.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I enjoy these a lot.
We're hitting like 2 hours and 40 minutes, so I'm glad I made the choice to not do a fall and summer anime thing, because this was way too long if that was the case. So,
yeah, no kidding.
All right, well then, let's not let it go any longer. I will talk to you later. Thank you all for tuning in, and have at least a mediocre day.